Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Stella Blue Coffee is more than just great coffee. It's coffee with a purpose. Introducing We Brew to Rescue, a nationwide campaign using proceeds from our new ready-to-drink cans to help fund 1,000 pet adoptions this year. Every can you crack open helps a real pet find a real home. Simple as that. Made with 100% Colombian coffee, each 11-ounce can delivers smooth, drinkable energy with a boost of protein. Available in espresso cafe mocha and espresso sweet cream. Built for mornings, long days, and everything in between. Drink Stella Blue, fuel your day, and help save a pet's life. You can follow our progress in real time throughout the campaign by watching the adoption tracker on our site. Grab yours now at StellaBlueCoffee.com, Amazon, and select retailers nationwide.
Trust no one and accuse everyone. And Who's the Bad Guy? The official Barstool Sports social deduction game from the brilliant mind of Nick Tirrani. In what's quickly becoming the most popular new party game around, players are secretly assigned unique roles, with the good guys trying to expose the bad guys and the bad guys doing everything they can to stay hidden. Each game unfolds under alternating day and night phases, with roles like the cool chick, the shy guy, the gambler, El Presidente, the mentalist, the planner, the funny guy, and more. Every round is unpredictable, chaotic, and ridiculously fun. Who's the Bad Guy is great for parties, pre-games, family gatherings, or groups who just love deception-based games. Game night will never be the same. Shop now on Walmart.com.
On this episode of Project Big Screen, we have a big one. Top 20 performances of 2025. What are our favorites of the year? Three reviews, two 2025 movies we have Is This Thing On, as well as Train Dreams, a movie that more and more people are checking out and loving. And then our first 2026 review of the year, Primate. All that and more coming up on Project Big Screen. All right, episode 15 of Project Big Screen. Jeff D. Lowe, Ken Jack, Clemmer, Gooch coming at you here. The second episode of January. Second episode of 2026. First 2026 movie we're going to talk about today, too. This fucking monkey movie. People love animals and horror, man.
And monkeys.
I don't want to hate on it too much, because quite a few people like this movie. We'll talk about that. We talk about a couple of 2025 movies, too. Train Dreams. Is This Thing On? We have a couple more 2025 movies we're going to get to. We're going to see. We'll talk Testament of Ann Lee in a few weeks. We moved that back because it's not quite out everywhere yet. That's fighting for a Best Actress spot. And then some of the international movies. The Secret Agent, which is still pretty difficult to see. I was lucky I was able to see The Secret Agent, but it's still not quite wide. That's one we'll talk about closer to the Oscars, as well as It Was Just an Accident, which of the international features, It Was Just an Accident seems like you can probably slide it close to lock status for picture. It seems like Secret Agent's pretty close. Seems like No Other Choice has a chance as well. But of the three, it does seem like It Was Just an Accident is going to likely get an Oscar and be a pretty big story just because of the background around it. But we'll get more into that whenever we do review it. It's pretty crazy. Also, housekeeping. Kirk will be back, I think, like early March, early to mid-March. We talked about it on the show the other day. Still dealing with some health stuff. When he's back, we will do our top movies of the century, too, so far. The first 25 years of the century. Which, by the way, we're going to include the year 2000.
Yeah.
I know math nerds, you know, it starts at 2001. But if anyone was alive for Y2K and all that, the year 2000 was celebrated, whether you think it's right or wrong, as the turn of the century. So we will be, that's good news for Castaway, potentially.
Great news for Castaway.
Yeah, potentially good news for Castaway. So we will include that, but that'll be right around the Oscars too, which should give some nice context to a couple of movies that are maybe from this year that may end up on the list. Let's start out though with Is This Thing On?
Yes.
From Bradley Cooper, his third director job. He's also in it as a character named Balls. yeah. He did A Star Is Born first. Obviously, it was a pretty huge deal off the, you know, when that movie came out, and then he was directing it, he was in it, all that. Then he did Maestro, which was a significantly less big deal, much to his chagrin. he worked very hard on that movie. He was like fucking prancing around Central Park and stuff, filming it. It was a passion project, and it was well received enough, but not anywhere near what I think he expected or what some people might have expected. And now he has his third one, which is just the smallest of the three by a long shot. Limited theatrical run, it's felt like for a while, though I think it's in more theaters now, but it's never going to be anything that gets like a crazy, crazy run. 1.93 million at the box office. Will Arnett is the lead in it alongside Laura Dern, the other lead, Andra Day, Amy Sedaris. There's a big cameo in it, which we won't spoil in case you haven't seen the movie. We will talk about it in spoilers, though, because it does feel like a pivotal moment in the movie. Whether you view that as a good or bad thing, I guess we'll get into that.
One of the most shocking things I've seen on screen in years. Like, really shocking.
Ever made.
Not sure it worked. I'll put it that way. 85-84 split Rotten Tomatoes, 7.1 IMDb, 73 Metacritic, Letterboxd 3.5. Facing middle age and an impending divorce, Alex, played by Will Arnett, finds new purpose in the NYC comedy scene while his wife, Tess, played by Laura Dern, confronts sacrifices she made for their family. A lot of stand-up comedians in this as well, kind of a lot of up-and-coming stand-up comedians from the NYC comedy scene. This is also loosely based on the life of British comedian Josh Bishop. This is actually, in technically speaking, a very loose biopic, loosely based on something, but it is based on something. That's how we got the inspiration, the idea for this. Clemmer, I'll have you go first. Is this thing on? What'd you give it?
Yeah, I give it 87. I like this a lot, especially the first hour. Hits pretty close to home for me in a lot of ways. I've been divorced, and I used comedy to help me get through it. I kind of threw myself more. I mean, I was already enjoyed improv, but I threw myself really into improv after divorce. It's just nice to go to a class or something to look forward to every week when you're feeling pretty low and just have like a bunch of like-minded people. I'd recommend that really for anybody who's like going through shit. Like, go take a cooking class, go take any kind of class, go take a group. It's something you're in a group, because if you're, especially if you're feeling alone, it's just nice to have something to look forward to and meet new friends. But I thought it handled it really well and really realistically. Like, a lot of that stuff, like, you start crying at the top of the hat everywhere you go. Like, his voice cracks when he's saying goodbye to her on the subway. Like, that's real. That kind of feeling where you're always like this close to just crying at all times. One of the characters is a panic attack in the bathroom. I had a panic attack in the bathroom. Like, it, so I thought it hit all of those notes really well. The second half kind of loses me. It becomes less about the situation at hand and more about the couple. And like, that I felt wasn't as effective. But I thought Will Arnett was fantastic in this. I think Bradley Cooper is just a really impressive director. I mean, to direct A Star Is Born and then direct this, very different movies, like you said, much smaller movie, and to have both be really effective is something else. Will Arnett is very good now. I know he's been divorced. He's married Amy Poehler, famously. They got divorced. So I don't know if he drew from some of those experiences, but he was great here. Laura Dern was really good here. Talk about a tough role to play. It's always tough to kind of be that other side of it. I think like Kramer versus Kramer, like Meryl Streep, that's a tough role to play. It's tough to be kind of the bad side of the couple, if you will. Not that she's a villain at all, but it's just tough because you spend more time with the other person. She's fantastic. I really like this. I just wish the second half was more like the first half.
Yeah. I think a big takeaway for me, I gave it an 83. I did enjoy it, though. I think that first half, I'd agree with you, Clem, but that first half, this is probably closer to like a 90 for me.
Me too.
One of my favorites of the year. And then I just think it kind of loses a little bit of steam. Like, doesn't have enough. I use this for a bunch of movies here, so I feel like I'm repeating myself, but not enough bite, I think, towards the end, which is fine. I think it has a nice ending. Like, the way this thing wraps up is nice, but I do think I think the second half, I don't know if repetitive is the right word, but it does start to feel like he kind of ran out of steam, as Clem was saying. Like, there's just kind of it doesn't say enough towards the end, which I thought it was building up to from the first half. But I did enjoy it. He can direct. He's a very good director. He's got an eye for certain things that you can just kind of see. Or like, oh, okay. Like, this guy knows how to direct a movie. But I would like to see him. I don't mind him doing smaller things. Like, I do find that he's a guy who voiced a raccoon in two of the biggest movies in the history of the world. Like, he's been in large things. He's been one of the biggest comedies of all time with The Hangover. So I like seeing him do smaller things. But I would like to see him take, like, a bigger swing with his next thing as well, though. I would like to see – I think at this point he's – I mean, honestly, after A Star Is Born, I think he had enough clout as a director to probably do something huge. And I would like to see him do something very big because I do think he has the eye for it. So I'd be curious if it translates something on kind of a larger scale. But I did enjoy this 83 out of 100. I think it's a nice movie that most people will like. But it, again, it doesn't hit as hard towards the end as I think much of the movie before that ending kind of led you to believe it might. But we can get kind of more into the ending when we spoil it. But yeah, 83 for me. Would recommend it. Gooch.
Yeah, by the way, he has done something big since A Star Is Born. It's called Maestro. We're going to respect that movie in this podcast. Snoopy will not be left in the vestibule ever when we record this podcast. But yeah, no, I like this. I like this.
I'll
quite
pass
a bit.
On respecting that
it,
movie.
It feels quite a bit like a lot of movies that we've seen before. But I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. It's a different pitch for Bradley Cooper, much smaller, more intimate. And I think he kind of nailed it. Doesn't reinvent the wheel, but you get two nice performances at the center. It's really nice seeing Will Arnett. I mean, it's always nice seeing really any comedic actor go in and take a dramatic turn because it really, they get to show off that they are just as talented as any of the Oscar nominated, you know, the regular attendees at the Academy Awards, that they are just as talented as any of those people. And that comedic acting is just, you know, a different flavor. And so here, Will Arnett does some really nice things. I really like the way Bradley Cooper shot, like, the stand-up scenes where the camera's just straight up on his face. And you can kind of hear the crowd in the background murmuring throughout these, like, basically therapeutic sessions he's having on stage. Really love those sequences. And Laura Dern, always reliable, plays the other side very well. And Bradley Cooper, self-insert. I mean, I was worried going in when I saw that Bradley Cooper is playing a man named Balls. You see these set photos, he's dressed up as Marc Maron. You're like, this could go south quickly. And instead, it's one of the highlights of the movie. He is so fucking funny as that character. And then wrapped up with a nice ending, which I get what you're saying, Jeff, that maybe that's the spot where this movie breaks away from the things that it's reminding me of and does something different. I don't really have a problem with it staying with that nice ending, but I see where you're coming from. I landed an 80 out of 100. Really nice movie. I'm kind of surprised it hasn't had more buzz. These are all likable people on the cast, behind the camera. It doesn't really feel like anyone's talking about it.
I do wonder if there's a connection issue because it's very New York. It's very New York stand-up. Yeah. Sometimes those things don't translate outside of that zone. I do wonder if that's part of it. Not sure.
That's fair.
Yeah. I'm right there with you at an 80, Gooch. I think that there's a lot of things about this. By the way, something, I don't know if you guys thought about this at all. The character of Balls, just in the world of connections, there's a non-0% chance that he is named kind of via Glennie Balls. Like, there, I can almost guarantee you Bradley Cooper has heard the name or seen Glennie Balls at some point in something. Their circles are too tight to not have. So I'm just saying there is a chance. I want to throw it out there. But as far as the movie, I think that it was awesome. I think Laura Dern really built for this sort of role. It was really one of the standouts for me. I think this sort of suburban mom or person in that sphere is such a great spot for her right now. Even if you watch Marriage Story, she wasn't the wife, she was the lawyer and she was exceptional. I think she's so good that real human being sort of role. And Arnett, I think, really brought it as well. And I didn't know he was capable of that gear, but I'm sure you guys are saying he poured some of his real life into that with his real divorce and all that stuff. It was just funny too, because then I went from watching this to the next day I watched Pop Star, where he's playing the TMZ guy, which is so fucking funny, unbelievably good, just goofy.
I don't think so.
I don't know about that. He's just so goddamn effortlessly funny. I like all the performances across the board in it. I thought were really, really good, except for one, which we'll talk about. And I think it's a pretty good script, especially towards the end. There's a really good line, but then another line that's kind of derivative of, you were saying, Gooch, this kind of borrows from a lot of shit. But it's very derivative of another movie that recently won an Oscar, which I thought was a little goofy. There's just some things, I think you kind of touched on a bit too, Jeff. It's not that there's anything on the screen where, except for one thing, which I disliked, but it feels towards the second half a little bit listless, where it's we're kind of still going through the same thing over and over and over and over again. And I still like what I'm watching unfold, but like I just need like another thing to happen. I need something to happen. And so there was points where I'm saying, I'm like, how deep in the movie are we right now? Because it doesn't feel like we're hitting like, you know, story notes that are going up or down or whatever. So I also think one last thing I would note is that the character, when you have a divorce movie like this, I think you need to do a little bit of a stronger job kind of showing the faults in both people. And I feel like he made Will Arnett like an angel. You cannot, unbesmirchable angel of a human being. And Laura Dern is this like absolutely unreasonable asshole. And I feel like they could have done a better job of like equalizing them a little bit to make this bit more of like you want to see things work. So I think that could have been a little bit better. But other than that, loved it. I think it's shot very similar to A Star Is Born. When you watch those two movies back to back, like they look visually very similar, ever down to every editing cue, I feel like, and camera movement. But I really liked it. I would recommend it to pretty much anyone. I saw it on a date with my wife, so she loved it too. So I think that it's a very easy one to recommend.
Yeah, it's. I think we all agree it's pretty enjoyable movie. And I actually don't. I mean, so we'll spoil things now. They do get divorced, or they do split, and then they get back together at the end, which is, I think that's fine. I guess my issue is that it almost feels like there's not enough time with the split, maybe. Like it almost comes back together too quickly, and it comes back together in like a nice way where it's like not perfect right away, and they kind of reconnect through this run in at a comedy show, which I thought was kind of tied together nicely. But I guess that's my kind of, as we can spoil it, that's kind of my thing, is like it almost doesn't feel fully earned getting them getting back together. And it's a nice moment, but at the same time I'm like, like, okay, like it kind of just wraps up and comes together too quickly. I don't know if people agree with that. That might be my biggest issue with it.
So first off, the whole thing where they happen to stumble into the same comedy club that he's performing in, the same time he's performing in all of New York City, that's insane.
That's funny. I like that, though. That's the whole crux of the story, right?
I don't mind that. That annoys me. It's just,
but it did happen. Like it was based off a real thing.
I mean, did the guy live? You said the guy was an English comic. Was he in? I mean, New York City. It's all right. Whatever.
It was the Comedy Cellar, which for those listening, if you're not familiar, that is like the marquee stand-up spot in New York City.
But this isn't the Comedy Cellar that we know. This is a Comedy Cellar this is a different universe Comedy Cellar, because Comedy Cellar has open mics, which the real Comedy Cellar, you have to work your ass off your entire career to get on. Like Francis, our coworker Francis is on it. He's been doing stand-up forever, and he's lucky, and he's talented enough to get on there. Regardless, the movie then shifts to it's no longer about what the first half was about. And that's why that second half, I think, feels kind of not empty, but like it just feels like misdirected. Because the whole premise is this guy trying to deal with the loss of his marriage and move on and find a new kind of purpose in his life. And the whole second half is just a kind of a rekindling, which it takes out the legs in the first half. It's too bad, because I think this movie was on to potentially being like borderline great.
So you would want them to have, like, because she found her passion again with like the volleyball stuff, you'd rather them just go their separate ways and be their own people?
That's what the first half of the movie is about. So I think it kind of cheats on the first half of the movie in a way. With that second half.
I don't know if it's like they ran out, because obviously I'm not saying like make the movie longer, have more like, you know, strife and more issue. Like I don't know, like maybe it ends a little before they fully get back together, like kind of leaves it open a bit. I don't know. For me, it just kind of felt buttoned up in a way that didn't feel completely earned. There's also a moment, which I don't want to boil this movie down to a cameo, but it was so
finally.
It was so abrasive that you have to talk about it. That the guy she goes on a date with to the comedy show is played by Peyton Manning, and it is one of the biggest whiffs of a cameo I think I've ever seen. Now, enough where I was entertained. I'm not sure that was his intent. Peyton Manning, you're a good SNL actor. Maybe it stops there. You're good in commercials. I think it stops there. I don't like. It was, and Laura Dern acting her ass off. In a very, very, as always, when does she not put in a good performance? And it's like my direction as Bradley Cooper would have been like, hey, you need to like maybe not act as well for the next 5 minutes, because you're making him look like a fucking idiot.
It was it showed you what a great acting is like in like when you're it's like watching a major league baseball player play against someone who stinks, like a regular person rather. You can see how talented these people are. Watching her off Peyton Manning, you can see how talented she is, because it was like it was it's also such a bad choice because it just takes you out of the movie. It's also a bad choice because he wasn't very talented. He's not a good actor. It was a bad choice for so many reasons. I don't really understand why he did it.
It was like watching one of those clips where, like, you know, like the mascots versus like the little kid games where like they're just stiff arming every kid into the ground. Like, I actually think like Laura Dern could be a more could throw a ball further than Peyton Manning can act. Like, you know what I mean? Like, whatever yeah. the ratio is, like it was very disproportionate. And it was just Peyton Manning is such a distinct looking human yep. being that's so hard to like really recompense as a viewer. So I see him, and like I saw him from when you first get introduced right in the restaurant, he's out in the distance. I see that big ass fucking head, and I'm like, I turn to my wife and I'm like, that's Peyton Manning. What the fuck is he doing here? Like, this is just, it's not your place. What are you? And he just is acting like he's in a State Farm commercial, and he's just, it's really super distracting, big whiff. And I get like Bradley Cooper's kind of in that space too, like the football stuff, like he's obviously big into that world, and I'm sure like he thought like, oh, this would be a cool thing, like some people like it, maybe it'll be like infrared to other people, but like it's so distracting. Horrible choice by Bradley Cooper.
Yeah, he's the type of famous where he just cannot play. You can't have him play someone else. He has to be Peyton Manning. If you're gonna have Peyton Manning show up, he has to be
it's
Peyton
like LeBron Manning. In
yeah
the Amy Schumer movie in Trainwreck,
and that worked.
I thought that was better.
Yeah, or like Cardi B in, what was it, Hustle? Or The Hustle, whatever that was. Like, that was, like, perfect. Like, it fits in right. Yeah. But, like, this was not correct at all. And he was even dressed like he's dresses on, like, fucking, I think, when you saw that to me, right? Like, he's dressed like he's dressed on Monday Night Football. Like,
yeah, I it took me in 5 minutes until I think he, like, asked about his marriage. And at that point, I'm like, oh, he's not playing Peyton Manning. Because for a second, I'm like, oh, maybe this is, like, a weird, where she was a very high-level athlete and had some connection where she knew him through something. And so she's meeting up with Peyton Manning. And then she's, like, asking about his marriage with some lady and how it fell apart. And I'm like, oh, he's a character. Like, a yeah. real character with a name.
Yeah. What's his name? Made a weird name, too, like Laird?
Laird, yeah.
Weird fucking name.
Oh, my God.
Actor I want to shout out before we get too far off, just because I remembered. The guy, whoever it was, and I didn't look it up, whoever plays Bradley Cooper's mom was fantastic. She was a laugh out loud every line.
I thought his dad was really good too. And that was one of the better moments of the movie when he, like towards the end, when they have that heart to heart outside the comedy cellar.
Yeah.
Really nice moment. This movie's littered with those kind of like really small moments that he just did really well. He impresses me. He really does. He's a weirdo. He's a fucking freak, but good Lord, he loves this shit, and it shows.
He's good at what I would say, in at least in this movie, and even Star is Born, some other ones. He's good at like quietly fun, like quiet, intimate moments. Like quiet, this movie's quietly funny, which I like a lot. Not like super in your face. Here's a punchline. Here's a buildup. Here's a punchline. Like for a stand-up movie, you might expect that, but I think this movie had a lot of like here's like a little tiny mini punchline that makes you go like like feel warm or whatever. Which I appreciate a lot.
I also liked his relationship with his kids. Like he was really like honest with his kids, and it was never like it never felt like a sitcom. Like the one scene where they have lights, it's like all right, there's a lot going on here. But he was never like frustrated, annoyed. Like sometimes you'll have that relationship where like the parents almost like hate the kids. The kids are annoying, and you want to hate them in the audience. But like this seemed like real, and like all right, this seems like a nice family. Like I don't know, that was I really liked the stuff with the kids. I thought it was really really well done.
What was his job, by the way?
Yeah, we do got to talk about their employment.
Like, you never see this, I guess, guy at work once.
But I think that's intentional.
Yeah.
I think you're supposed to only see the comedy side of his life. Because we get a small glimpse of it with the stand-up comedian. I forget her name, I'm sorry. But like when she's a nurse.
Yeah.
He's like, you're a nurse? She says, no, I'm a comedian. Like I think that's the important part.
Yeah. Yeah, I do like that. Like his work is the least stressful work of all time, though, because he's a lot of shit going on in his life. But work did not add to it one bit. He must have.
No. He's good at his job.
I did. Yeah. I appreciate that he, like, whatever. This may not even be a thing to like critique for like the quality of the movie. But like he did work through the comedy scene a little bit. You know, he's kind of bouncing around and like you know I again that's why it's like again like the first like I don't even want to say second half. It's like the first three quarters of this. I did think played really well, and the ending plays fine. It's just like. I don't know. Like I do feel like there's like a little more, like if Bradley Cooper, like, you know, at the end of the movie, like the bottled up everything he can do. I think there's a little left in the bottle. Like that's kind of, I think he's got a little more, I guess view that as a good thing. Like I do think he's a very good director, and I didn't like Maestro all that much, but like there was enough to respect there. Like I'll at least respect like his talent and his dedication to something. So curious what he does next, but we all suggest this movie. So
respect to him for making Will Arnett just look exactly like him, by the way.
Yep.
He looks, Will Arnett is playing Jackson Maine in this movie.
Yes.
Correct.
So it was some of my favorite, not that there's many, you know, not that every movie we get 15, not that every year we get 15 movies, I said that backwards, that have stand-up comedy in it, but it's some of my favorite stand-up comedy in terms of how it was shot. And making a space feel kind of small and tight and like a little nerve-wracking and chaos. I thought, or just in general, just how something was shot of somebody being on stage in front of a crowd. I did like that. I thought that was a good like flex of his talent there. But we'd all suggest this thing on. Everyone has it 80 between the in 80, 85-ish range, kind of like that. So definitely a movie that we'd say if you can see it, go see it. If not, I would assume it'll be on fucking Hulu or wherever. Disney will throw this is a Searchlight release, this movie. So definitely check it out. Next up is Train Dreams from Netflix. It had a super, super, super limited run. Hour and 42 minutes long. Robert lives all of his years in the forests of the Pacific Northwest, working on the land, helping to create a new world at the turn of the 20th century. Covers like 40, 50 years. Ends in, I think, like the late 60s.
Yeah.
Post-World War I. Clint Bentley, the director, did the movie Jockey, also co-wrote Sing Sing last year. A very good movie that A24, I think they forgot about when it came time to promote things for award season, based on a 2011 novella. Has Joel Edgerton, Felicity Jones, Kerry Condon, William H. Macy, Will Patton, the narrator. No real box office here that was in theaters for a limited time. I actually oddly heard Netflix told critics to see this in theaters. It's kind of like a good chuckle for me. It's like, okay, well, why don't you fucking put it in theaters then for everybody to see for a longer period of time? I didn't get to see this in theaters, and it was one of my biggest bummers of the year that I had to watch this. I have a nice TV. Netflix streams well here, but I would have loved to have seen this on a big screen. 95-90% split around tomatoes. Actually pretty surprised by that 90 audience split around tomatoes. Because I thought this would be something that maybe doesn't play great with audiences, but I think it's also like a pretty like deep, relatable story. I think there's like a lot that you can take away here, very human and raw. 7.5 IMDb, 88 Metacritic, 4.1 Letterboxd. One of my favorites of the year. I'll go first. 92 out of 100. I love, love, love this movie. It sat with me, and I've liked it more and more. I saw it a while ago at this point now. There's just something here. It's this just story about just fucking working hard to make a living and to find a way through life, and in the face of tragedy and loss and just kind of doing what you got to do. And then eventually finding a way as best you can to bring it all together, and to kind of put a bow on life. It's a very deep, like poetic. Every year there's a bucket of movies that I'll use the word visceral on. This is definitely right at the top of the bucket. This is fucking art, man. It's one of those types of movies that feels that way. And I think it's just a beautiful movie. Yeah. Even in the face of some things that are very negative for the character, just this movie has a lot to say, and doesn't always say it with just words, like just looks great on screen. I love this movie. And I'll tell you what, I know Frankenstein's the bell cow for Netflix, but man, big whiff on their part not pushing this harder, because I know they've pushed it for sure and they told critics to see it in theaters, so you know I'll give them credit for that. But I wish this would push as hard as they push Frankenstein. And I get why Frankenstein would be pushed harder. It's fucking Frankenstein. Guillermo del Toro,
that's why.
Yes. Lordy, you have all these big names in it. But this is gonna get, this is not lock, but it's like close to lock for Best Picture nomination. And that's without a like fucking cranking the wheel push from Netflix. So imagine if they had done that. Imagine if this was pushed as hard as they pushed Frankenstein. It looked like it was like maybe going to get one. Now it's like the groundswell for this movie continues to grow. I'm not going to win it, but like good to see because people have found it. They've liked it. It's not, you know, some eat it up slop for, you know, an hour and a half. It's not some like overly easily digestible thing. Critics like it. Audiences like it. So cool to see because I do think it's one of the year's best movies. It's a top 10 for me. And we talked about it a little bit last week when we did our top 20 of the year. But yeah, 92 out of 100 for me. I really love Train Dreams. Like I'd suggest checking this one out big time.
And people have been. This has been one of the, like you said, Jeff, I am shocked at how many people have gravitated towards this movie in particular, which, I mean, Joel Edgerton has a fan base. Felicity Jones has a fan base. Kerry Condon. But this really isn't like a movie that you would think that people would latch onto the way they have. It's so sad. It's such a sad movie for the amount of fanfare it's gotten.
It's, I think a lot of it too, though, is which I think when you think about it, and you can give your score next, but like it's again, it's just like it's a story of just a hard working fucking guy.
It's such a human story,
right? It's like it's so maybe not relatable in the fact that, you know, the four of us aren't sawing logs, you know, but
speak for yourself.
But you know, like there is an element to that, like, that you can either, even if you don't relate to, you can appreciate and be like, damn, like that's amazing. Like everyone likes a good hardworking, like, even success is not the right word for this, but like, you know what I'm saying? Like a hardworking mm-hmm. story like that, which we don't get a ton of nowadays in movies like this, which is also, I can't believe I'm gonna relate these two movies. It's also kind of why people like Sung Blue too, right? Like I heard kind of the same comment that people were like, you know, it's just a classic story of people facing adversity and trying to make it work and trying to be successful. And you know what? I know, like, as corny as that sounds, that kind of works. But this is like,
why is that corny? It's a thing that humans face. Like, there's nothing corny about that. It's okay to like tap into the human element, and like, it's okay to like, those are good things. Those are good qualities. Like, it's like schmaltz isn't a bad thing. And I'm not saying this is schmaltzy, Train Dreams, certainly not. But hitting the heartstrings we don't always have to hit the brains. Sometimes it's okay to hit the heartstrings.
Well said. I do think I'm lower on this than most people, but I'm still at an 80. I think coming out, I was at a 70. The one big detraction for me, and it's one of those things where you watch this movie and you're just kind of blown away by the technical mastery across the board. Like you said, Jeff, gorgeous movie. Like a movie that you can pause at any given moment and you can frame that mm-hmm. shot. Like it is breathtaking, and I'm really sad that they didn't do a bigger rollout release wise when it was here in New York. They played it at IFC and it was almost impossible to get a seat in those theaters. So yeah, gorgeous movie and well acted. Joel Edgerton, always reliable, and he really gets to shine here. He doesn't always get these kind of lead roles, and this is really, I mean, just him almost. Like, it's, I saw someone kind of compare it to Forrest Gump, where it's like this guy and the world changing around him for 40 years. And so this is a big, big, big performance. The narration is what really kind of lost me. And it wasn't a turnoff off the bat, but 30 minutes in is where I started to. And this, maybe it's because I'm on my couch when I'm watching this instead of in a theater. But the narration did wear me down. You know, I had time to sit and think about the movie and what I liked about it and what it was saying. And the boldness of being that melancholic, I think, for this kind of release really got to me. And getting to think about, you know, the back half of the movie, especially, and how somber it was, the moments with Kerry Condon, it does carry it quite a bit further for me and makes me at least get over my aversion to that narration. So 80 out of 100 for me, really great stuff.
For those who are movie novices, by the way, maybe may not know Will Patton by name.
You know him by face.
You know my face. He's the defensive coordinator, and should be the head coach, I might say. And remember the Titans. So just for those who may not know my name, anyway.
I give it a 90 out of 100, and I think that this movie appeals to a fairly narrow window of taste. Like, I think if you enjoy directors like Terrence Malick or Tarkovsky, like, this is going to be extremely your shit. But if you go and you ask 100 people on the street who are these two directors, zero of them will know. Like, so. I think that in like a world because like we're kind of in like this art versus entertainment discussion constantly in like the film Twitter world, where you see people like taking dumps all over Sean Levy for making entertainment, and people being like, well, this is art, this is entertainment. Like, this is art. This is absolutely unquestionably, like, this is an art movie, no question. It is beautiful to look at. The score is incredible. And I think the actors are also asked to do a lot without speaking, and they succeed at it. Like, Edgerton, like, he barely says a damn word in this movie, and he says so much with his face. Like, it's crazy. And then you have a guy like William H. Macy come in, and for a few times, for just a few lines, really, like 10, 15 minutes of screen time, and just, bam, knock it out of the park. It's crazy. I loved it. It's one of my favorite endings in recent memory, like one that really, really stuck with me to the point where I went back and, like, I think I mentioned this in a couple episodes ago. Like, I went and just rewatched the ending alone for a couple times, in addition to just rewatching the entire movie. But it's also a movie where I don't feel safe recommending this to almost anybody. Like, I would have to know very specific details about their taste in movies before I would safely recommend it to them. But still, for my personal taste, my palate, I loved it. I enjoyed it a lot. Great to look at. Great to listen to. Liked the sort of, like, I think that the Forrest Gump thing is kind of an interesting parallel. And I actually like the narration because I like Will Patton's voice. I like hearing him talk to me in that smooth little dulcet tone or whatever you would call it. So I enjoyed this quite a bit. Just don't know how safe I'd feel recommending it to people.
I think this is one of the greatest movies of the year. I have six great movies this year. This is one of the six. I have this as a 91 out of 100. This is the most beautiful movie of the year. It's fantastic. I will say, if you're in New York City, it's playing at the Paris Theater Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday of this week. So if you have a chance to go see, I think it's at 35 millimeter too. That's where I saw it. It was fantastic. It's beautiful. I really disagree with you, Ken Jack, about recommending this movie. I would recommend this movie to anybody. I think it's a story about humanity and just about trying to find the first half is about trying to find happiness, and the second half is about trying to find peace. And I think those are things that people can relate to, especially life can shift. Now, it shifts dramatically for this character, but life can shift and you might need to shift kind of what you're looking for or what purpose your life has. And I think that's pretty relatable to everybody, where like things happen in your life. You're like, all right, what am I doing here? Why am I here? What is happening? How can I go on, or how can I make light of the next rest of my life? And this character, they say at the outset, lives a long time. So like, how does this guy get to move on? And then also, just like Jeff was saying with the work stuff, like his industry changes, the world changes, the people around him change. How do you change as you get older? Like, people are different now that I work with than I worked with 20 years ago. And I'm sure 20 years from now, they'll be different. And that's super relatable too. It's a movie about aging to some extent, or about the world aging or progressing around you. There's so much to take away from this movie. It's such a beautiful movie. I really, really, really love this. And I didn't know what to expect going in. It's the movie I cried the most at this year.
Yeah, it's got a really great ending, because we're spoiling it now, but nothing goes right for this guy's life. Nothing at all. Very hard worker, has some incredibly large jobs in terms of the expansion of the United States further west, and just the face of tragedy, which all haunts him, whether it's someone getting killed intentionally or someone dying accidentally, the loss of family and not even knowing if he really lost them or not, and like how he lost them, like, are they really gone? And like, will they show back up? And it ends with him in this plane. And the ending of this movie, he just like, it all kind of, the narrator talks about, like, it all kind of comes together from a little bit. You know, I'm not saying like money isn't raining down as the plane is doing flips in the air. But like, point is, like, he's able to at least come to a peace and connect with like the moments in his life and like what he's done and what he's at least achieved. And whether it, even if he's not achieved some things, he's worked hard at that. And I think it's just this beautiful ending where you're like, it's not perfect for him by any means. It's not even close, but like, there's just something there. That's like, I don't know. This tranquility and peace that he comes through, that it's like, wow, just, it's just a really good ending. Just like, I that was the part for me. Like, I liked all of it, but they really tied it together. And again, it's like, I actually don't, to kind of branch what you were saying, Clemmer, about Ken Jack, I don't disagree with what Ken Jack said in terms of not, but like, now I would, like, when I first saw it, I would have absolutely said that. But now it's like, I'm seeing, it's like, people like it. And again, it's, I hate to use this as a way to shit on their other movie, because I enjoyed some of Frankenstein, but a lot of it I didn't like. And like, it's like this, some of it's like too much. And like, I get what they're going for and trying to appeal to like people. And I know it's a passion project for Guillermo del Toro, but like, this says a lot of like, in terms of, they were pushing that one, but this is the one that clearly more people are connecting with. You know, I know we don't want to over put too much stock, and Gucci said a few weeks ago, and you were right. I don't want to put too much stock in the Rotten Tomatoes of things, but like, I'm going to take a stab at saying Train Genius probably wasn't a review bomb. So it's a pretty fairly like it's, Train Genius is probably a pretty like accurate depiction. And it's also pretty high everywhere else too. So it's like, I'm glad people are connecting with this. And it's like a good reminder of like, if you make something that can be relatable or can be understood and you can connect with an emotional level, you know, you don't, it can be something as, you know, again, we use the word poetic with this as a visual spectacle that's saying a lot and has deep meaning. It says a lot without needing to say a ton of shit either, right? And like, it's just a good reminder, hopefully. Like, I hope Netflix sees this and is like, okay, maybe more of this.
I hope all movie studios see this and go, it's not that hard. It tells the story of an early 20th century logger. Just tell someone's life. We don't need to have the world blow up. We don't need to have crazy CGI. It's just simply a nice story about one person and their life. It can literally be that easy.
I do think to a degree part of that too is for the Netflix angle of it is that the algorithm told them IP, 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 IP. So like Frankenstein is the thing they need to push. Yes. And versus the quality or more quality product in Train Dreams, which I would agree
with. It's great that like again, there's still a chance it doesn't get nominated, though it is looking more and more likely. It's kind of great that this like would get nominated, and they've definitely pushed it. Again, I don't want to say they haven't pushed it because they have pushed it, but like not to the extent that Frankenstein's been pushed. And it's like kind of cool that this just is gonna get. This is like, hey, we'll fucking do it ourselves here. You know, we'll
have
be
you
honest,
guys seen always. Jockey?
No,
seen what?
I've seen Jockey.
Have you guys seen Jockey?
Mm-hmm. No,
it's really good. Like, it's not as good as this. It's really good. It just tells the story of a jockey dealing. He has alcohol issues, other issues. And it's just really effective. This guy is really talented. I can't wait to see what Bentley does next. He's rising up my list of like guys I'm most excited about their future. He's really great. This movie is so beautifully directed and so wonderfully shot. I don't know. I walked away super impressed.
Yeah, Jockey has you know, I have to do it. It's got a House of Cards character. I got to reference it. It's the character that plays Jackie Sharp. She's in the military, and then she becomes the whip. She dates Remy Dan in House of Cards. She's in Jockey.
Clemmer, did you see Sing Sing last year?
I did not. I got to see that.
Oh, yes.
Sing Sing was great.
It's a duo, technically, between Bentley and his, I guess, co-creator is what you would call it, Greg Kwedar, which they just take turns directing. So first one, Bentley,
that's very cool.
Bentley did Jockey. Okay. Quater last year, Bentley was the co-writer and he got directing credits on that one. They flipped back on this one. So it's a duo, but yeah, no, I love Sing Sing. So I'm very interested in checking out Jockey now.
Sing Sing is great. I own Sing Sing over my shoulder. Sing Sing.
And funny enough, the same thing happened to Sing Sing last year where A24 had that batch of movies where they couldn't decide what to push. And Sing Sing kind of got left in the dust and they put that one on the back shelf when that's probably they should have pushed.
It's kind of funny. It's like, I don't want to sound like I'm just going to cape for movies on streaming, but it is funny. It's like, this is the instance where it's like the big difference between Sing Sing and this is just on Netflix.
Yep.
This was just readily there. It was, you know, it's got a name that I think like, I'm sure people would click on. Right. And it looks nice in the window when it auto plays maybe. And like, so again, I'm always going to, by the way, we got to talk about we're doing top 20 performances of the year. We have to talk about one news item about movie theaters. That just reminded me. Uh-huh. I'm always going to say movie theaters, but this is one of those things like this ended up having a pretty large benefit, I think, of being on Netflix, where it's like that's the difference. Because Sing Sing, A24, they fumbled the ball big time with that movie. Crazy.
They're pushing like Civil War at first. They're pushing like, I'm trying to think what else there was in that year.
Yeah, I forget what it was, but they didn't. And the weird thing about Sing Sing was Sing Sing, every year when the Oscars ends, you know, I'm sure we all do this. You look at like, what are the movies the next year? And Sing Sing was on there. Sing Sing was like a pre-release Oscar buzz, and they still somehow didn't find a way to land the plane with it. Strange. Very good Coleman Domingo performance. Yeah.
It did get original screenplay though. Right? Or adapted screenplay.
Yeah. It got something. Yeah, I know it got some things, but not what it was supposed to originally. But anyway, Train Dreams, check it out. If they re-release this in theaters before the Oscars, if it gets to the best picture, I don't know if they will. I will absolutely go see this again. Just to see
you're in New York. go to Paris Theater Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
Yeah.
It's there.
That is, yeah, big time. All right, this episode of Project Big Screen brought to you by Rocket Money. Have you ever had a moment when you realized you needed help getting your finances under control? Rocket Money is a personal finance app that helps find and cancel your unwanted subscriptions, which, by the way, big one right here. Monitors your spending, helps lower your bills so you can grow your savings. Rocket Money tracks subscriptions, has the ability to cancel within the app with a few taps, saving time and avoiding charges. That's huge. You can do it in the app. I have doubled up on so many streaming services. It's ridiculous. And Rocket Money has helped me clean that up over the years. The app consolidates checking, savings, loans, investments into a single dashboard to give users a clear view of their financial picture. You can set budgets and goals, get personalized insights, regular reports, receive real-time alerts for large transactions, upcoming bills, refunds, low balances, and more. Rocket Money also has an automated savings that grows towards goals with adjustable amounts, frequency, set it and forget it approach. You got to love that. Again, I own more streaming services than anybody could ever possibly imagine, so many that I have actually doubled up. Let Rocket Money help you reach your financial goals faster. Join at rocketmoney.com/bracket, B-R-A-C-K-E-T. That's rocketmoney.com/bracket, rocketmoney.com/bracket. All right, first movie of 20, which I don't think we all saw. Who all saw Primate here?
I saw.
Okay.
I did not.
Gooch, he hates monkeys. It's fair. It's fine. He just doesn't like them. Scared of monkeys. Doesn't watch Planet of the Apes. Won't watch Dunstan Checks In.
Fucking hate Clemmer.
Dunstan Checks In. Damn. Or was that one Joey? What was the Joey one with the primate?
Ed.
Ed. Oh, Ed. Ed is one of the great horror movies of all time.
Ed rules.
It is horrible.
Ed rules.
Ed is so bad.
I think if you go to our channel on YouTube, you can find an old video of Clemmer and our coworker Brandon Walker reviewing the movie Ed.
Absolutely.
Ed and Moneyball, right? Is that what it was?
Was right.
Ed and...
it was called Double Play. We did two movies.
One of the great double reviews. Primate. 10.5 million opening at the box office. 89 minutes long. I think it's the shortest movie we've talked about so far on this show. Lucy's tropical island homecoming turns deadly when the family's clever chimpanzee Ben becomes rabid. With the father away and no help coming, paradise becomes a prison as Lucy and her friends fight for survival against a pet they once trusted. Johannes Roberts, who directed most recently Resident Evil Raccoon City. I don't think it was the full name.
You didn't catch that one?
What was the full name of that movie? It was Welcome to Raccoon City.
Yeah.
2021. One of the worst movies of that year. I believe I gave that a sub 25. 26. I was wrong. Apologies. And then 47 Meters Down. His next movie will be the 47 Meters Down sequel, I saw.
48 Meters Down.
Yep. You'd be stunned to learn that he's not calling it that. Some people like 47 Meters. I didn't care for it. I know some people like it. Not my right. thing. Johnny Sequoia, the lead actress, plays Lucy. Jessica Alexander. Troy Kotsur, Oscar winner. Troy Kotsur from the movie
Coda.
78-74 split Rotten Tomatoes, 6.3 IMDb, 61 Metacritic, 2.9 Letterboxd. Kendra, I can go first.
Yeah, so this is like, I think I'm very safe throwing this at like a nice blanket, like 65 out of 100 for me. Because I think there's two ways to look at it. Because one is that I think it's a pleasant surprise as far as horror movies go. Because when you read the synopsis for it, it feels like you can already picture the extremely forgettable CGI monkey horror movie with nameless, faceless people, hits all the same beats and comes out in January and you never hear about it again. And instead, you do get practical both in the chimp and the deaths. And I think that that was so much scarier and much more evocative than anything computer generated, especially in the horror space can be, where it's so cheap. We just saw that even with, like, obviously not like a horror, but like Anaconda, like whatever, like you just don't feel, you feel nothing looking at that. And I do think that, like,
true. I would agree with that. That's a great take there. Yes.
Yeah, and I think that, like, seeing this chimp, like, you feel something. You feel like that's an actual physical monster that could destroy you and kill you. And I think this isn't like a revolutionary movie from a story standpoint. Like, it's pretty basic stuff. Like I said, like, all the plot beats are the same from most of the horror movies, where you have like a horror animal that you'll see. But the execution, I think, is what helps this stand out against, like, the crap that usually comes out, especially from horror, especially this time of the year. So it's it's definitely, on the one hand, way it stands out against most of the other horror movies, and I like it more than those. But at the same time, like, it's just, it's nothing really that super special from a story standpoint, or from like, wow, they did something I've never seen before or anything like that. It's just, it's good. And I think it's one where, as far as horror movies go in recent memory, like outside of like the big like Sinner type deals, like it's one of the better ones, I would say, which is weird to say. But it's still just nothing that special. But again, it's all relative here.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a 60 out of 100, which is pretty high for someone like me who doesn't like this shit. It just knows what it is. It's tight. It's an animal horror, body horror kind of, in a way, like gross out slasher with a monkey movie. It's tough to the starting gun for the year is always tough for me, and I feel like it's always like a 60 to 65 at 100. But I respect what this is, and I think people will probably like it more than I ended up liking it. And it does seem like a lot of people have that as the case. But I think 3-star Letterboxd, 60 out of 100, gets the job done. Just not, also not for me. I don't.
It's terrifying, you know?
Yeah, I just don't love the monkey ripping the face off thing. I don't know what it is. Not for me. Not my cup of tea. That's there's the real story, obviously, that happened like 15 years ago or 20 years ago. The woman was on Oprah. She got a face transplant. It's a crazy story. I just don't care for it. Worked well in the movie Nope. But a whole movie of it for me, it's just not my thing. People I saw with the theater was, I mean, it was a raucous theater, that's for sure. They love the absurdity of this. Some shot well too in spots, I will say that. Crazy this guy did Resident Evil, Welcome to Raccoon City. Because you don't get that here. Clever.
I like this for what it is. I give this a 71. This knows what it is. It's one of the most brutal movies. If this came out last year, you would still say it's one of the most brutal movies of the year. That's
This is
what do they say in Breaking Bad? Like, no half measures, right? Like, do what you are. Go all in. And they go all in. They rip someone. This is not even a spoiler because it happens in the first 3 minutes. They just rip someone's face right off the first 3 minutes of the movie. They're like, we don't give a fuck. We're going to go all in. And good. Do that. Go all in. Show that. That's what people go to these movies to see. They want to see the really violent deaths. They want to see the crazy situations. This all takes place in one setting. And the director, I thought, did a really good job building intensity. It's scary. It's one of the scariest movies you would have seen last year, like as far as just being on the edge of your seat. It's a ridiculous premise. It knows that. There is like a camp element to it, which is fun. Like at times it has very like dark humor, which is needed and I think great. It has a really short runtime. It checks all the boxes. Like if you're looking for a horror movie, it's pretty fucking good. And for a slasher movie, leans into it, which is all that I ask these movies. Like, please don't half-ass it. Don't, sometimes you'll see them try to get maybe the PG-13 rating or they'll like dial back the deaths. No, we want to see everything. Just go all in because that's the fun of these movies. And this movie embraces it. I think it's pretty well done.
Yeah. I don't love 47 Meters Down. I did not like Raccoon City. He like found something here. Like he directed like a nice, like it takes a lot of homage from other horror movies of the past, but at this point, what doesn't, you know, like not everyone can be Park Chan-wook with with no other choice and like inventing camera angles and shots that you've never seen, but like he does a nice job with it. I think he's very good at positioning the monkey for scenes and moments of dread and suspense. And I think that's what a lot is going to come down to if it's your cup of tea. It's just not mine, which is just that is, but that's why I feel like saying I gave it a 60 is like almost like a pretty big compliment because I think it's well done. I think people, these are the types of things I do think should be put out at this time of year.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like
perfect
more
January movie.
Yep. Like more of this.
Genre specific that goes, that's maybe not trying like Oscar Beatty, obviously it's kind of a dumping ground, but just be super into your genre. And dump that out for people that love that genre. That will get them out in the snow and everything else to go see your movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, more of this and less of what we'll be talking about next week, if people see it. I'll be seeing it. Fucking Greenland 2.
I saw it. Less of Greenland 2. More of Primate. Absolutely, Jeff.
Greenland 2.
And I like the first Greenland.
We'll get into that next week.
I'm so disappointed.
Was stunned to learn that this was not the same thing as Moonfall. I was like, doesn't the moon drop? I go, oh, that's fucking Moonfall.
That was horrible. Greenland was good. Moonfall was horrible.
Yeah, neither. I think this is enjoyable. Look, if you like horror, absolutely go see this movie. Like, no doubt in my mind, check this thing out.
What if you like monkeys?
No,
you probably would not love it.
You'd be sad.
It'll make you sad.
It is sad. The monkey. It's sad. That's sad.
Yeah, it's really sad. That's a big reason I don't love it. It just doesn't. It plays too much. That's just not my thing. But that's fine. That's fine.
But I think they handle even that part pretty well. I don't know. I think it's pretty good.
Yeah. 60s for me and Kendrick. 70s for Clemmer. Check it out if you like horror. If you like a good slasher horror, this will absolutely tickle that fucking desire. Because I'll tell you what, it doesn't hold back. It does not hold back. Take a swing. This is the time of year to take a swing. And they at least took a swing with this. Hopefully it makes a little bit of money. Get some people going. So again, we're going to skip news and trailers and stuff because we're going to do our top 20 performances of the year. But I do want to know, I'm a huge Alamo Drafthouse moviegoer. Huge Alamo Drafthouse guy. Yep. They're all over Austin, Austin-based company. So moving back here, it's kind of like – it's also kind of the only thing here that shows the small stuff. So I do think like $30 a month, I can see a movie every day. They are known for – two things. One, it's a dine-in eatery. They're kind of like the pioneers in the space. They've been doing it for years. I saw Borat at an Alamo Drafthouse. And the other thing is, they'll kill you if you take your phone out. Like they like an old cartoon character hurled out of a house, like throw you out. Like they say it 100 times pre-movie, and during the movie you write down your order on a piece of paper and you push a button. If you've ever been to an Alamo and they come, the waiters scurry in, they take it and then they bring the food. They're actually going now. They started doing mobile ordering recently. It's going to be mobile ordering the entire movie now. And they're saying that they want to preserve the experience of no phones as best as possible, that they're going to make sure that their website is dark mode, very minimal color and light. So it doesn't disrupt people. I think that's like a, if you don't go to Alamo, it may not hit as hard for you. That's like a crazy move.
Crazy.
Insane.
That's like, that's basically going to a sport, like an arena, and them saying, don't step on the court, and being like, you can go on the court now. Like that's how serious they take texting at Alamo Drafthouse. It's like, it is the entire MO theater. Like,
if
you don't
go to the
text
movie early, Aziz Ansari spends 30 minutes yelling at you to not.
Yes. Yeah. He's like, put those phones away. Yeah. Which I thought was a tie-in with that Angel movie, the Keanu Reeves Angel movie. Right, but I don't think he's still doing it.
He's still doing it. Yeah, I know.
Maybe Barack Obama picking that as one of his favorite 50 movies of the year is why they're still doing it. I couldn't believe that, though.
The problem is with this, Jeff, is that it's not, okay, dark mode, wonderful. When people take their phone out, now they're going to see all their text messages they missed, or whatever. Now they're in their phone. Now we're in that world, and now they're not going to put the phone away. The paper and pencil works. Why are we doing this? Why are they changing it up?
So here is what was contested to me, and let me see if you agree with this, because I get this a little bit. I was told that people think that this now just means one less trip for the waiter to scurry in front of you. So the waiters are now walking around less looking for the paper, coming to get the paper tickets, and because now they just get the order, and now they only come to bring the food. Right. I can understand that. Okay. I get that a little bit. But it is like, it's crazy. Again, if you're a moviegoer and you go to Alamo, this is crazy. This is nuts. Like, they don't – this is their whole brand. I couldn't believe it.
I'm shocked. What I don't get is why are they accepting orders during the movie? How many movies are long enough where you get something and then you need to place a second order? And I like Alamo, and I like their food and their drinks a lot. Like, they have some good boozy drinks that are absolutely delicious. But if you can't sit in your seat for 2 hours with one meal and a drink in front of you and like make it through the movie, I feel like that's a pretty reasonable ask. Now, they obviously want to sell as much as possible, but Yeah, I just, that's the one thing where it's like, just during the movie, quit moving around. Stop.
Yeah, I get like, if I get maybe like, maybe you're not hungry right away and like, you don't want to have to get up and go, but I don't know. The whole thing is, I was like blown away. And if you don't go to Alamo, it won't hit you as hard. But if you've been, you know, like that is like, wow, that's a crazy change.
I just don't think the waitress thing is that distracting because you have people like, people walk in and out of the theater going to the bathroom and shit while you're in the movie anyway. Like that's not that, like you're, that's already kind of built into your experience. The phone is not, you do not want the phone. So like that to me, I don't get it. I still like Alamo a lot. Like, yeah, I would agree with you. But yeah, I don't get it at all.
My big thing is, they better change those intros now before the movie starts. I don't want to, what are they going to say? Like no phones. Well, except unless you're giving us money and phones yeah. out, phones right. out. Yeah.
They literally have an alarm. Yeah, like
it's the beginning of, it's from kill. It's the Kill Bill thing.
Yes. It's the Kill Bill. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh man. Yeah. I was like, I couldn't believe it. I like stopped my tracks when I read that thing. What so things we've been watching, I'm going to note one off the top. Gooch, you can talk about it first because I know you definitely watched it on Netflix. People We Meet on Vacation, based on a beloved book starring Emily Bader, who I didn't know too much about, but she was in a mob movie last year that I kind of thought like was pretty decent. It's called if five people listening to this have seen this movie, I'd be stunned. It's called Fresh Kills. It focuses on like the women of the of, like, mob families. It's got Odessa Azione's in it. Jennifer Esposito's in it. It was like pretty good. But it also has, this movie has Tom Blythe, who
from Hunger Games.
Yeah. Was very recently in, played President Snow in the Hunger Games, The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes. Good. People seem to love this movie.
I was trying to think of the other, what is it? Mafia Mamas? Mafia Mamas?
Oh, what Toni was... Collette. Toni yeah. Collette. Yeah, that was.
That's so terrible. But yeah, no, this shocked me. I'm usually not one for these like Netflix rom-coms, which I wish they would. I love that they do them because I think that's like the lane that they should be in terms of their type of content and their audience. But it feels like too often they just kind of shit these out and they're usually just terrible. This one. Very enjoyable, and I think it's in large part because of Emily Bader, who, welcome to, she's my new client, welcome to a new representation, I will be singing your praises and getting you in more movies, you were wonderful, and Tom Blythe, who I liked in Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes, and I think he plays really well. I mean, it's just really good chemistry between the two leads, they're very good-looking people, they have good chemistry, they're going all over the world, because it's kind of the premise is they travel around together yearly, so they're in different locations. It's not shot terribly. It's not shot great, but in terms of Netflix rom-coms,
no, it's nice enough.
Yeah, exactly. And this is, yeah, no, this is like, this is what I really want Netflix to be doing because this was so nice Friday night to just throw on and enjoy and just kind of have a fun time with. No, I liked it a lot.
It's a nice enough movie. I haven't logged into Letterboxd yet. I don't know if I'm going to give it, but I did just watch it and it's a nice enough movie.
Nice rom-com.
Yeah, it's probably around what I'd give it. It could have been a little, you know, could have done a little more with the characters. I think it's a little surface level at times. I wish I would have like gotten to know them maybe more. But I like them. She's good. I like him too. I think he's a good actor. He's got something. The ladies seem to like him too. So yeah, I feel like this won't be the last for old Blythe. People are there. Book stands are I guess like big fans of Hunger Games are pissed that he's not playing Snow again. In the next movie, even though it's what, like 30 years later, 40 years later,
angry about Ralph Fiennes. Can you imagine, like, that's the most lobster too buttery thing ever? Like, it's crazy to be angry about that.
What about you, Ken Jack? You see anything?
I haven't seen anything. I do have some physical things. I actually bought some, thanks to Gooch, who sent a sale to us on Barnes and Noble. Got Conan the Barbarian, one of my favorites. Yeah. I love old sword and sandal shit. JSA, which we actually talked about the other day. I didn't have a physical copy of it. I love Joint Security Area. And then one of my all-time favorites, The Chronicles of Motherfucking Riddick. I love this movie. I think it's so fucking cool. I think it's such a perfect scale for sci-fi. It was cheap, and it still looks great. I'm a big fan of Chronicles of Riddick, so got those three.
When I sent that link, Ken Jack, I was like, 90% sure that you were going to pull the trigger on Riddick. Like, I saw that on sale, and I was like, "That's Ken Jack will own that by the end of the week."
Dude, it's a cool set too. They got three discs in it, man.
They're Arrow releases, which Arrow is also sold at Barnes & Noble. It's sort of like Criterion, but they're less invested in restoration and more in creating kind of a collector's
edition. Yeah, they lean into things from like the 90s, 80s, like action, like different types of things that you consider to be garbage movies too. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's like guilty pleasure type things, but also like I got the Dollars trilogy from them as well. When I wanted to, I had the Steelbooks, but I want to put like the 4K discs in there, and I got the Dollar, and they're great. I did Criterion. Donald, speaking of fucking President Snow, got Don't Look Now, Donald Sutherland.
Oh, nice.
Never had L was one of the ones on my Criterion. Love the cover of that, and then I also did the Arrow sale. Now I got a bunch online, so I'll show them off next week when I get them. But I got two. One I've been thinking about getting for a while. Clemmer might like this one. I don't know how Clemmer feels about these though. I got the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles box set.
Hell yeah.
All three movies, including that piece of shit third movie. But so some people like the fancy artwork. Give me the OG poster. I want the poster. That's how I know this movie. So I got the box set. Comes with all three movies, pumped about that. And then this movie, when I tell you, I stopped in my I was stunned. I didn't know Arrow did this. I couldn't believe this. You got William Hurt, Matt LeBlanc, Heather Graham, Gary, Lost in Space.
Baby,
this movie, I love, and the artwork is incredible. The artwork right here is better than any single moment in that movie, except for the helmet. That when the helmet comes on, which by the way, they did that like stop motion. They did that all in camera, that Matt LeBlanc helmet moment from Lost in Space. I fucking love this movie growing up. I think part of it was because like we were friends with Seinfeld. We were friends in Seinfeld. So like, I was like, oh, that's fucking Joey Tribbiani. Like as a kid, I love that piece of shit movie. I couldn't believe that was a physical 4K. I was so happy. It's one of my favorite things I've got now for the shelf. So yeah, I got more coming from Arrow. It's a good sale. It's still going on, 50% off.
Yeah, I got the Just Inglourious Bastards off of it. And then I also, there was a 4K sale on Amazon, which there's always 4K sales. And I got Training Day Classic.
Nice.
Yeah.
I saw all three of those Turtle movies in the theater, Jeff. I love those. Yeah. Go. That's what I was peak Turtles.
People got the tattoo.
Often confuse the last one and call it Turtles in Time because I believe the video game was correct. Turtles in Time. They don't. They do go back. The third one is the difference between the third one and the first one is unbelievable.
Oh. same April O'Neil though, bizarrely. I saw the 1966 Batman. Robbie Fox and I have a new show called Super Critics. Where we're going to go through each superhero movie and review them in chronological order. So we're starting with 66 Batman, then we'll go to 78 Superman, so on and so forth. Eventually we'll hit Marvel, probably like next year. I'm super excited. I think it's going to be on My Mom's Basement channel. So it's going to come out on Thursday. So if you're looking for just some more movie content, Thursdays, My Mom's Basement, Robbie Fox and I talking superhero movies.
Are you going to do like the very small budget stuff from the 80s and 90s, like the different
the Fantastic
movies.
Four movies.
Yeah, like Fantastic Four.
No, it has to get a theatrical release.
You all should do the Spider-Man, the fan-made Spider-Man from the 90s. That'd be fun.
We talk about like some movies going to be like in the Phantom Zone. We have to do movies like, it has to get a theatrical release. That's kind of the rule. Otherwise, you get kind of caught in the world of like so many cartoons.
What was
and
that one
like
you
that.
Found when you were looking it up? Do you remember it was like Wacky and the Bozo or something like that?
Yeah, there's some, obviously there's some, but like a theatrical release and, you know, there's like Road to Perdition is technically a comic book, but we're not going to cover that. But like, we'll cover movies like The Shadow or Rocketeer that weren't comic books, but superheroes. So, So Batman, Superman, the first two, excited.
Hell yeah.
Good stuff. Also, I'm still enjoying Fallout, by the way.
Yeah, it's hard to explain. Like, there's some issues with like scaling and characters, but other than that, I'm mostly like,
I don't know the games well, but I see it consistently. It's maybe the most praised thing I've seen in terms of like doing things that you do in the game that they convert into the show. That are just that you, if you don't know, you don't know. It's part of the show. And if you know, it worked, but it's also an Easter egg. So shout out to clearly they know what they're doing, which is impressive, and I enjoy the show. So,
yeah,
the NFL playoffs, folks, they're here. Glorious first weekend, and the best place to spend it is in the DraftKings Sportsbook app, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. They make every moment of the NFL playoffs feel even bigger than they already are. A running back through the line, first touchdown, bang. Strip sack, flips the field, bang, right in there in your account. Anytime touchdown parlays, maybe you had a crazy one. Crazy QB who never scrambles gets in to close out your big touchdown parlay. Tight end you've never bet on. The guy's had no catches all year. Big playoff touchdown. Huge in the DraftKings Sportsbook app and online. The live betting options are amazing. You feel the moment. Maybe the Bears this past weekend. You're like, this team's not losing. The cardiac Bears. Hit that live bet. Plus, DraftKings has your back with the early exit protection, and there's no sportsbook better with early exit protection. If you get an injury in that first half, and you have that player in an NFL prop bet, they go down early, you get paid not in credits, in cash. You get paid in cash. DraftKings doing things that other people aren't doing. New customers bet just $5. And if that bet wins, you get $300 in bonus bets instantly. DraftKings Sportsbook, every drive, every play, every moment. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code BIGSCREEN, BIGSCREEN, to turn $5 into $300 in bonus bets if your bet wins. In partnership with DraftKings, the crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. Connecticut, call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino in Kansas, wager tax pass-through may apply in Illinois. 21 and over in most states. Void in Ontario. Restrictions apply. Bet must win to receive bonus bets which expire in 7 days. Minimum odds required. For additional terms and responsible gaming resources, see dkng.co/audio. Limited time offer.
All right. Top 20 performances of 2025. Fell wrong to only do 10. And again, for these big lists, it's more fun to have us all have equal amount of picks. The order is going to be Ken Jack, myself, Clemmer, Gooch, and it's Snake's back. Can be anything. Supporting, lead, doesn't matter.
Okay.
Men only. Only men, but no. Ken Jack, you're up first. Top performance of the year in your eyes.
I do think it's actually pretty easy for the number one performance because I do think it is the most, it is one of the most difficult performances, I would say, of the year, and one of the most magnetic and one of the most interesting. And it's going to be Timmy. It's going to be Timmy and Marty Supreme. I think that was an extremely difficult, high energy, interesting character that like had to be played so perfectly, otherwise it would come off so fucking annoying, like the worst, most frustrating character of all time. And I liked it a lot. I think Timmy knocked it out of the park. I think in a just world he wins best actor. Oscar politics are obviously different, but I do think like in all things were take that out of the equation, he is the best actor this year. So I'm very comfortable taking Timmy here.
Yep, he'd be my 1-1 as well.
He's the performance that when people think of this year, they'll remember first, I think.
And I feel pretty comfortable saying that's going to be one that people remember for a while. That's going to be like, oh, he won the Oscar for that one. Like, that's going to be one that sticks out. So, that's obviously a very good 1-1, as I think most of us would have had that. I'm 2. I'm going to go 2 is fitting for this one because he played 2 people, and that's Michael B. Jordan, Sinners. I rewatched Sinners, Marty Supreme, and One Battle last week because I'm doing my kind of end of year rankings, did my blog and doing a video. I actually, on rewatch of Sinners, I bumped it back up to number one.
As wow.
My top movie of the year. I watched, and didn't change the score on One Battle, didn't change the score on Marty Supreme. I just bumped Sinners up to 97. I fucking love Sinners. Unbelievable movie. This performances are so good. It's a shame that he's not going to, like, I wish it was more of a three-way battle for best actor with Leo and Timmy because I think Michael B. Jordan is that good as both characters. And the weird thing about a two-character performance that's so good is that I feel like the better it is, the less you think about it. It's like it's this weird thing where you don't even – it's so natural and fits so perfect. And obviously it's not just his acting. It's the way they integrated it in the movie and the way the effects were done. Like, it's so fucking good, and he brings so much heart and soul to that movie. And some humor. It's badass in moments too. It's just such a good performance from Michael B. Jordan. It's two fucking roles. It's a year where we saw so many two role performances. My number three would have been I'm going to fumble the ball because I forgot the fucking movie name. What's the name of the fucking movie? Alto Nights.
Yeah.
De Niro is two. No. But it was like that one you had.
Mickey 17.
Yeah. Yeah, monkey. What's the monkey movie?
The monkey. Yep.
The monkey. Fucking twin. Yeah. So there's a bunch of them. But yeah, I thoroughly enjoy Michael B. Jordan. So number two for me on the year.
Why do you all, before we move past MBJ, because I think he is one of the kind of unsung, it's weird. He's very clearly an A-list actor, very respected. But what is it about this performance in this like Oscar run where he's just getting what feels like completely forgotten in these discussions? Like really
came
forgotten.
Out in the spring, didn't
there's,
help.
There's certain timing. Movies where I think where the movie outpaces the acting. Like in Marty Supreme, like it's all Timmy. Mm-hmm. And like even in like One Battle After Another, like it's really like it's actor driven, and I don't think that's the case with Sinners really at all. Like it is very very minimal to do with how they are acting, and he's really good and he's super charismatic, and I think that fits the characters both of them perfectly. But like if you were to like, I don't think you could replace Marty Supreme with a different actor from Chalamet and it's as good. I don't think you could replace Leo in One Battle really, but I do think you could replace Michael B. Jordan in Sinners and it would probably still be an extremely good movie.
Yeah, I also think there's some movies that just get the movie pushed harder for these types of things. Sure. And I think Sinners as a whole is getting pushed as a whole package more than Marty Supreme is. Marty Supreme is getting pushed, but Marty Supreme is definitely getting pushed harder for Timothy Chalamet than it is anything else. And One Battle's kind of being pushed more as a larger scale thing. I mean, Sean Penn is no longer the favorite to win Best Supporting Actor. That's probably the best example of that. Is that he kind of tanked off because the movie and PTA are kind of the things that are being pushed, it seems. Also, timing, as Clemmer said. I think that didn't help either.
Sinners is more Cougar's movie than Jordan's movie.
I would agree completely.
Mm-hmm. And it's not like I'm not like saying anything shitty about either. They're both incredible, but it just feels like more Cougar's flex, where I feel like with Marty Supreme, it's more Chalamet than Safdie.
Yeah.
By a nose. It's close.
But then you can flip it. Like even in like Dune, I would say Dune is more Denny than it is Timmy. You know what
absolutely.
I mean?
Absolutely. Sure. Oh, by a lot.
Yeah, there's movies where that flips like all the time. And I do think just in Sinner's case, it is way more less because of Michael B. Jordan, more because of how well the movie's directed.
But sure. He's great. I mean, it's a great pick. By Jeff.
Clemmer, you have three.
Yeah, I also wish it was a three horse race too. But instead of DiCaprio, I have my guy, Jesse Plemons, from Begonia. I think you can make a case. This is right there under Chalamet for me for best performance of the year. Playing someone who I think there's a lot of those people out there. There's a lot of people working thankless jobs and like these Amazon distribution centers, things like that, and really have nothing. And when you have nothing, that can fester and foster some dark thoughts. And I think he plays it perfectly. And you never really know kind of what's happening at that movie. And that's credit to him and Emma Stone. As far as like what is the truth, what is the reality? But they both play it so real. You're always bought in. He's fantastic in this. I thought in a weaker year he should win 9 years out of 10.
He's very good. He's I almost think he's close to Emma Stone, and she's so good. And I actually have no problem with you picking him over Emma Stone, but like she's so good in everything she's in that she typically dwarfs performances that are also fucking incredible, but I don't think she dwarfs him in this one. Like he's that good in it. So
And she's like incredible. She's very high on my list too. Like, so yeah, 6-1, half dozen the other, but they're both fantastic.
Yep. That's a good pick.
I love that.
I'll say this too. This is one of those things where I think Gooch has maybe said this before. You know how people always talk about like, what's the movie that should get a sequel? People always bring up The Nice Guys. And at this point, it's like, everyone just says The Nice Guys, so it's not like an unheralded pick. Like we're getting to a point where I feel like we're always saying things about Plemons, like not enough love, but he is like, it has ramped up enough in the last couple of years. Like he's definitely getting more love now, which is good to see.
Yeah, it's awesome to have a guy like this that is just so clearly, you could put him into any movie and that movie immediately gets better. He's so fantastic in anything you put him in.
Gucci of back-to-back picks.
Yeah, for my first one, I'll go, and I'm sure this movie might have a few picks. I would bet on it. From sentimental value, I'll go Renata Rintzva, which I think that's, she had a little clip going around this week on how to pronounce her name. Thank you for that.
Renata, that's absurd, because I thought I learned how to say it properly. So that's
straight from the horse's mouth.
She's moving the goalpost. I believe her.
She... thankfully, I think is going to finally break through on this one after getting horribly snubbed for worst person in the world. she is just as good, if not better here. It's a movie that was built around her, and she gets to really, she's in supporting. She is the heart and soul of this movie, or she's lead. That's what it is. She's lead. Stellan's supporting. It's that weird.
Stellan
mix.
Is supporting.
Yeah. Yeah. They're both the lead, whatever. But she's just fantastic. She's like, it's so fun to have an international star like this, where you can just see that she's going to break through in America and through Hollywood and have these just, you can see a career ahead of her. Like, you can see it, and it's very exciting to have that right now. So Renata, and then I'll follow it up with Leo. I think Leo's right there with Marty for lead actor this year. He has so many great performances, and I think that's really what's working against them in this kind of Oscar race, is that you're like, is it as good as Wolf of Wall Street? Is it as good as the Departed? Maybe not, but those are two all-time performances, and I think this is right there with them. He is so good.
It's just
good.
A smaller and less heralded role. That's the problem. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing. It's just like, I like that that's that type of role he's doing here. I like that it's something a little different.
Yeah, no, it's just, he continues to get older, and we almost take it for granted how good he is, but he is so fucking good in One Battle. And every subsequent viewing of that movie, I've come away more impressed by what he's doing.
Yep. Those are great back-to-back picks. I mean, Leo at 5 just shows. I think this, it's been a good year for some big performances. Clemmer, you have 6.
I'm going to go with the movie we talked about today, and that's Troy Kotsur in Primate. I mean, what a performance. No, Joel Edgerton in Train Dreams.
I was like, what the fuck?
No, Joel Edgerton in Train Dreams. I mean, he you see his soul on the screen, and you care about this character so much, and sometimes it's kind of a cheat code to play someone that you could never have met because he's good before your time. Like Daniel Day-Lewis. That's always why I have Philip Seymour Hoffman ahead of Daniel Day-Lewis, because he plays real people. I'm not saying Daniel Day-Lewis isn't a great actor, but there's something to be said playing real people. Having said that, I feel like this is a real person still, even though it is someone that I could have never met. And he has, and the emotion, and like you guys said, I forget who said it earlier on the show, like he doesn't have a ton of lines here, but it's all with his eyes and with his body language and just how he's moving around, and it is just sensational. I really appreciated. I liked Joe Edgerton before this, and I walked away with a whole new appreciation. He is so talented. I hope he gets more great projects like this.
He's got a lot of like weird small projects too. I don't think a lot of people watch. Like, he's one of those guys, you can go look through his filmography and you'll see something like, you know, The Fighter or whatever, but then you'll be like a random small thing you never heard of. You go watch it and he just crushes.
He's
so
got good. A movie coming out. I don't know if it's going to end up releasing this year, but he's got a movie that he wrote. I don't know if he's starring in it, but he wrote it. And David Michaud, the guy who did The King and some episodes of Succession.
He did The King, which he was in, Joel Edgerton was in, and he was amazing against Timothy Chalamet.
I forgot about that. But yeah, no, he wrote a movie. It's supposed to, I think it's called Wizards. So look out for that.
Shout out Trey Young.
7, I'm going to go with one that we're going to talk about in a few weeks. I think she's fucking incredible in this. I know Gooch has seen it. Amanda Seyfried in Testament of Anne Lee. I think she's fucking unbelievable. Like, you want to talk about heart and soul on a screen. A role she only gets because she didn't end up getting Glinda in Wicked. She, like, very famously, it's like she, like, two people in the world wanted a role more than anything in their life, and it was happened to be the same role. And Ariana Grande got it, and because of that, Seyfried did this movie, which also very similar to we just talked about how they switch back and forth with Train Dreams, Mona Fastfold and Brady Corbet. They switch. They're now, I guess, switching back and forth on who directs. They both write. I said this last week. I think this is better than The Brutalist. I think it's a fucking incredible movie. It is a lot. Not everyone's going to love it. But I think even if you don't love the movie and the type of what they try to do here, this like kind of crazy genre blend, like I think it's pretty... It's pretty crazy if someone doesn't think she's amazing in this. Like, I think she's that good. I think she's unfortunately get boxed out in a very strong best actress race. It seems like it's between her and Chase Infinity for that last spot, who's also great, may show up on the list. But I think Seyfried is as good as anything she's ever been in this. It's a crazy mix of her musical talent, but also her ability to just fucking act the shit out of a movie too. And you saw it this year with another very different movie in The Housemaid, but like it showed her ability to like take it to this absurd level. Yeah, I think she's amazing in this movie. I'm excited to talk about this in a few weeks, but yeah, I'll go Amanda Seyfried number 7.
She's great. In a super weak year, you could say the House of Performance could be on someone's top 20.
Oh, yeah. That's, I actually, the funny thing is, I didn't really know much about this movie. When I first saw her name pop up in some of these things, I thought it was for The Housemaid. And I was like, I kind of believe that because that does feel like a movie where, like, you know, it's one that people don't love, but it's like, but that movie, that performance is so fucking crazy, right? Like that, like that's why it's there. Because she, I mean, she carried that movie. Carried that movie with our guy Brendan Sklenar.
He's not so bad.
No, he's not. I just, like, he cracks me up. He's just like,
he's not so bad.
He does. I just, the idea of him just makes me laugh. But I thought he was good in that as well. He's good in that as well.
Great pick.
Kendrick, you've back to back for 8 and 9.
Well, I've been drinking. My wife made me natural cold brew, and I just realized because she gave it to me in a Guinness glass, it just looks like I've been
pounding Guinness all day.
You were doing that.
No, this is nitro cold brew. I was just like, I was looking at myself while I drank it. I'm like, it just looks like I'm just ripping Guinness at whatever, 11 a.m.
Well, you have a Chargers game later tonight.
Yeah. So drink comes after.
Yeah, that's what I thought it was.
That'll be later today. Yeah. No, that's later today. I think next up, I will go with Lee Byung-hoon from, his name I constantly mispronounce, Pog. From No Other Choice, because I think that he had what I would call a very difficult performance to do, because it's a very like layered character. Because at first he plays like what I would call like a very normal, regular guy who you're supposed to empathize with, like regular, all that stuff. And he's got to like break down into this madness to the point where he does something like the worst thing a human could possibly do. And I think he gets to that point very well, while also kind of maintaining the facade with his family and all that stuff. So I think that he did an exceptional, exceptional job acting. And I think he deserves a lot more credit this year than I think a lot of people are giving him. So I go with him.
That's a great pick. You have back-to-back, too, so you can rip another one.
Yeah. I mean, great performance. Like, the faces.
He was in my top 15. So he has to, like, if he's bad, that movie like, stinks if he's bad. Like, he has to bring home a crazy performance in terms of range and, like, type of character. So, yeah, I think that's a great pick.
Yeah, imagine Brendan Sklenar trying to do that.
Hey, come on now. Sklenar would hold his own.
No Other Choice. That's what it's called when you can't find a good actor for your movie and you have to pick Brendan Sklenar.
That's bad. This is unfair.
Slander. This is horrible.
I like him. I think he's not bad.
Come on.
Josh, another guy, Brendan. Next up, I would go for, I think it's between two actresses, and I think both were exceptional. I think one, like you were saying, Clemmer, one was more of a real person. One of them was playing more of a character that isn't as real. But I think that Jessie Buckley in Hamnet was insane. Like, without her, and you want to talk about a movie that falls apart without a performance. Like, if Jessie Buckley doesn't bring that home, like, that is it turns it from what a lot of people viewed it as, like you and Kirk kind of didn't connect, like Oscar Beatty type feel. It turns it from like some people think that to some people love it, to just everybody thinks that that's Oscar Beatty shit. And that's all I think on Buckley, and Buckley is insanely good in that movie. Such a huge like range of emotion to try and go through, and I think trying to portray the most devastating thing I think a woman could ever go through, or a parent I guess could ever go through, through a period piece is very hard. I think she did an exceptional job, so I'll go with Buckley. Now, I've had stock in her. You want to talk about you putting stock in Bader? I've had stock in Buckley since like Chernobyl. I've been all over Buckley.
So I do have to. Kirk made such a great point in the show when we talked about it. With Jessie Buckley just walking around the Globe Theater with her mouth agape, just kind of like stunned. It does take something away from that performance for me for some reason. I can't get her just like being so stunned at the play and everyone telling her to shush for 10 minutes. That did detract a bit from the performance, but she's fantastic. But I did have to bring that up because that is one of the more ridiculous scenes in a serious movie all year.
But that birthing scene, the birthing scene where the baby's stillborn or is not breathing when it is first birthed, and she has that reaction on her face, it runs through, it's just like inexplicable, the number of emotions that are running through her, and it's one of the best scenes of the year in terms of performance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she is very good. I don't love the movie. She's very good. Very good. I have 10. I'm gonna go with Sean Penn. I think it's a travesty that he's not gonna win Best Supporting Actor. I think Stellan Skarsgård. I mean, he might have a comeback at the end, but it is leaning heavily towards Skarsgård, who I will say, I was about to say, was definitely the lead performance, but you could almost argue Sean Penn was the lead over Leo at some points in that movie. So whatever. But I think Sean Penn is. Also, there is an element I will recognize with Sean Penn that I think some people don't like Sean Penn. I think that's a big reason why he may not come voted for. But
some people,
I think he's fucking amazing.
Twice. I mean, he's also like it's a pretty broad performance, Jeff.
For sure, but I do. I mean, it's been a while since he won. His Milk was the last one, right?
Yeah.
I don't. I just think I just know it's part of it, right? There's politicking involved a little bit, and Sean Penn is Sean Penn. I think he's so fucking good in this movie. He's just like a scary, menacing dude in this, and terrifying in this creepy, unsettling way. The way he moves his mouth and like licks his lip, it's awful, but in like the best way. I've loved this movie more and more since I saw it, and I think he's a big reason why. Definitely top 10 for me, top 5 for me. So Sean Penn, number 10 on our list, best performance of the year. One battle after another. Clemmer, you have 11.
I'll go with the person that should win Best Supporting Actor, and that's Stellan Skarsgård for Sentimental Value. You see three different kind of sides of this character that I really appreciate. You see him kind of at work with like the Elle Fanning stuff. He's like more sensitive and more grounded and more caring in a bizarre way. You see him with his family, he's a lot cold. And you see him also even with his like director of photography. And like then you see like the kind of the sympathy there. And I love seeing those different facets. He's an actor I've liked for Christ. 25, 30 years now. He's incredible. And this might be his best work yet. And I said those three different tenants are the reason why for me.
It's really good, man. By the way, we didn't talk about it in our review for Is This Thing On. Two movies innovating the way to use a paper towel was unbelievable. That was crazy. Mm-hmm. Stellan Skarsgård doing the full wipe with his hand and then Ball is doing it with his foot with the paper towel roll. That was crazy. What are the chances?
When Balls comes down the stairs and just fucking falls.
Oh, yeah. Oh shit. Oh.
That was a very funny performance. Oh. Bradley Cooper, come back and do some more comedy. Funny guy.
Yeah, I would love that. That'd be great if he did that.
It's very funny. It's a good pick. No, Stellan's fantastic. I don't know if he's my favorite supporting actor performance of the year, but very justified win here if he does get it, like some are predicting, because it's just been, what a career. What a career for a guy. Mm-hmm. I'll follow that up.
Back to back.
She is picking up some steam and making, I don't know if it's an interesting race yet, but she is picking up some steam, and that's Rose Byrne and If I Had Legs. We talked about it last week. It's one of those movies that's been done quite a bit lately, but I think she, along with Mary Bronstein, kind of carry it to new heights and make it something that I enjoyed quite a bit. It's a very unnerving performance, very frantic. One that made me want to call my mom afterwards and be like, sorry. I'm really sorry for you putting up with me all these years. I loved it. And then I'll follow that up with Ethan Hawke, who I thought was just fantastic in Black Phone 2. Ethan Hawke, oh my God, you got the pen. I don't know.
Do I need this?
Yeah, I love when they give out. It's always for the most random movies when they do those pens. Always. But Ethan Hawke in Blue Moon, I'm glad more people have seen it. Richard Linklater is getting kind of bisected between his two films this year in terms of Oscar push. But Blue Moon is the one that I've seen and would push behind in large part, and pretty much solely because of that Ethan Hawke performance. Just him at a bar being a weird little man, weird little theater playwright, and just dominating the screen for hour and a half. He's so good. He's just one of our best.
Yeah, those are good two back-to-back picks. Ethan Hawke is, I mean, as reliable as anybody in Hollywood. Like, you're going to get something great with him. Clemmer, you have 14.
Okay. I am going to go with, I talked about Begonia earlier, Emma Stone and Begonia. Just incredible performance working off of Jesse Plemons. You never really know where, is she an alien? Is she not an alien? Having to play that, that's harder than it looks, I think, to never really know where your character is grounded in, which reality they're grounded in. You believe she could be a CEO. She does all that kind of the office mechanics really well. Even her face when she walks back into the building at the end of the movie, she has that office grin on, which is fantastic. She's obviously, Emma Stone's one of our greatest, if not the best actress working right now. So no surprise she knocks out of the park here.
Yeah.
Yep.
She's in a kind of Leo situation, like I mentioned earlier, where she just has so many great performances, so close together too. Like this has been a 10-year run where she just yearly is coming out with something great.
Yeah, I mean, you, like, and then you have, like, The Curse. She's even doing, like, weird stuff on TV that, like, hits. Like, everything she does is great. Like, she's the best.
Yeah, she is. I actually don't think there's much of a debate as her being the best working actress right now. Like, I just think she's so, she is. The resume speaks for itself. She's going to keep winning awards. It's just very fucking impressive. Number 15. I'm going to go, who is now the odds-on favorite to win Best Supporting Actress? Congrats, you had a long-shot ticket, which I do own one. Amy Madigan, Weapons. I think she's going to win. I think it's trended that way for a while. I think Wicked had enough of a hit that it kind of hurt Ariana Grande. I think Teyana Taylor is very good in one battle, but I just don't think there's a ton to go on there for her. Where as good as she was, I think she's overshadowed by too many other things with that movie. And again, we talked about it. I think that movie is being pushed so much harder as like PTA's thing and for it to win picture. I think Inga Ipsdotter Lilius is great in Sentimental Value. I have no clue how she'd win that award. There may be an outside nomination for Wunmi Mosaku from Sinners, but I don't think she's going to win. I think it's going to be Amy Madigan because she's going to start winning the smaller things. I think it's going to gain some steam. I think people are going to like the idea of her in this horror movie winning. But I don't think it's very deserved. She's great. What a fucking horrifying character. It's a great turn of making that movie just ridiculous in a way that works so well and makes Weapons one of the year's better movies. So Amy Madigan, 15. Very cool if she wins for this. That's a cool moment at the Oscars if she ends up winning for this movie. So hope it happens.
I just rewatched Gone Baby Gone, which, by the way, is still a sensational, fantastic movie. She's really good in that. I forgot how good she was in that movie. I was like, holy shit, Amy Madigan's in this. I forgot she was in it. And she watched, I'm like, my God, she's so great. She's awesome. Great pick. Great pick, Jeff.
Mm-hmm. It's a shame that Weapons is not going to get a nomination.
It is.
Yeah, that's a bummer to me. But if she wins and that's a big recognition the movie gets, that's awesome too. So. Ken Jack, back-to-back picks, 16 and 17.
I think first I'll go with one where, like, it's maybe not – I don't think it's going to be one that really super top of mind, especially at award season, like, not at all. But it's one where it really stuck with me as being, like, a very pound-for-pound, like, holy shit, he really crushed this and made the movie sort of performance. I think Ralph Fiennes in 28 Years Later was incredible. I think Ralph Fiennes in that movie, like, he comes in – dude, holy cow, man. Like, he steals that whole Memento Mori thing, like, that whole sequence with, like, the mom dying. Like, that is, like – it was like a heart ripping moment. And I think he crushed every second of that for what should be like, if you read that scene on paper, like patently insane, like that is something like that scene should not work at all. But Ralph Fiennes makes it work because he's just so like, I don't know how to explain, like otherworldly, like ethereal or whatever, like in that whole sequence. And he is just and obviously an exceptional actor in everything he does. But I think that in that movie, he really made it. He really made that movie. And I can't wait to watch Bone Temple. Very excited.
Hell yeah.
Me too.
Yeah. And then I'll back to back it with an actor that has been getting a lot of hate lately for his performance. And we actually met him. But he is, I think, exceptional this year. He's been winning some awards and people have been getting really pissed about it. I'm going to go with Indy the dog from Good Boy. Indy the dog. You want to talk about performance of a goddamn lifetime from an animal that we watch that movie. I still, right now, don't understand how they got a dog to do those things. And that dog...
They show you how in the fucking credits.
He's emotive. He's evocative. He makes you feel what he's supposed to be feeling. And he's not feeling it because he's a dog. So I think that Indy the dog is going to be one of the best performances of the year this year. There's no better animal performance in movie history. And I think that you have a movie that's centered around a fucking dog being scared of ghosts. That should not work at all. But it works because Indy was that good of an actor. So I'm going to go with Indy the dog.
The whole credit sequence, they show you how they do it.
Yeah, it was awesome.
He's not acting. He's just reacting. Terrible. This is one of the worst picks in any of these entire show. This
might be the animal worst actor pick of all time.
This is the dumbest. I know you're like half trying to troll here.
No, it's no troll. It's no troll.
Anyone has done on this show.
It is no troll.
Episodes? 12 episodes? The dumbest.
It is no troll. That is one of the most impressive acting
performances. Not sure I'd pick Indy the dog. Not sure that'd have been my pick.
So shitty. There's so many good. Like, I feel so bad. I'm looking at my list. There's some people are going to leave
I'm
off.
Sure, here. They're going to cry their heads off.
I love dogs. Dogs can't act.
I'm sure all those other actors are going to cry in their beds. They didn't get in the PBS Best Performance Awards.
They're going to. Then why do anything?
Because it's what I feel. This is what I think was the best performance.
No, it's not.
Yes,
no,
it is.
Not. You're lying. You're full of shit.
I was legitimately, and you can go watch our review of it. You can go watch our interview with the director and the dog. I was blown away by that dog. I was beyond.
But he didn't act, Ken Jack. They literally, the whole point of the whole after scenes, like, so, no, it was like, it was just a trick. It was an illusion.
He was acting.
No, he wasn't.
You're telling the dog what you want him to do, and he's doing it. That's acting.
I think it's a crazy pick, but you got Clever Mad, so that's funny. That's funny enough for me.
The shittiest thing. Come on. Shittiest thing done on this show. Jesus, come on.
Shittiest thing done. We're all here Sunday morning. How dare you, sir? Shittiest thing done.
How dare you, sir? How dare you give the award to a dog?
No, it's because it's not authentic, because it's bullshit.
It's completely authentic.
I'm allowed to say it's shitty. You're allowed to like do your half troll. I'm allowed to say it's shitty.
No, it's completely 100% authentic. I was beyond impressed. The Indy the dog, more impressive than anything Brendan Sklenar has done in his entire life. That is a fact.
I don't have Brendan Sklenar on my list. I have a lot of good actors on my list that aren't going to be recognized.
You know Brendan Sklenar for Drop on your list?
No, I do not. He was very good in it, though.
All right, Indy the dog at 17. I was going to maybe go with him outside the box pick, but I'll reel it in after that. I almost put my guy at 18. But actually, there's one that I like a lot, who is getting some late surge here, actually. And that is, I don't know how, I believe I'm saying the name, of Miles Caton from Sinners. Fucking awesome performance.
So good.
The singing fantastic. Sets. He's kind of the, I guess, relatable human character in the movie, right? He's kind of the guy that you're riding along with, from start to finish. And I think he is in one of his first roles ever, maybe his first ever role. I think he's fucking fantastic. Just again, in terms of a movie that has a kind of a mood and an atmosphere, sets it with both of his big performances, the one in the car, the one on stage, obviously with the big dream sequence. I think he's been slept on all year, and he's getting some late steam. He's getting some late steam for award season. I don't think he's going to sneak in, but it's one of those ones where if it got nominated, you'd be like, oh, there was a roadway here. There was a path. So I think he's excellent. So I'm going to go a little further down on my list. There's a few I probably could have picked ahead of him that I maybe would have. You maybe rank him gun to my head. But yeah, I'm going to go Miles Caton there.
He's awesome.
18, Sinners. Clemmer, 19, your last pick.
I'm gonna. Yeah, right. Yeah, I picked the monkey in Primate, but it came out next year, so I can't do that.
That was a real actor by your standards.
at least that was an actor in a suit. At least was less a human being doing things. Sally Hawkins in Bring Her Back. This is a movie that hasn't gotten.
Oh yeah, that's a pick I wouldn't have on my list, and that's a great pick.
The movie's too much for me, to be honest with you. The stuff with the kids, like, it was the most distressing movie I saw all year. Mm-hmm. I would have visions of the movie like for the next 2 weeks afterwards, like destroy my thoughts. It was such a dark, twisted movie, but it was so well done, and she is incredible in it. Is it my favorite movie of the year? No, but it's really well made. It is really effective horror. Like I said, it's too much for me, but I'm probably just old and soft.
That movie's a lot with intent.
She's great. She's really good in it. Like unbelievable. I think the situation was the movie just came out probably too early and people just kind of forgot about it. And plus it's been a pretty good movie year. So something like this could get lost in the shuffle, but she's fantastic and deserves more acclaim.
Gooch, last pick, round it out.
Man, there's so many names here. I know, Clemmer, you said this was a weak year, but I disagree.
I said the opposite.
Oh, okay. I misheard. But there's a lot of names here that I would like to put in, but I got to go with my heart. And that's David Johnson from The Long Walk. Yeah, no, I really was blown away by that performance. I showed up for Cooper Hoffman and then was absolutely smitten with David Johnson's performance. Went back, watched Rye Lang too, which is a completely different performance, a rom-com. He's got talent out the wazoo. I mean, he dominates the screen, and The Long Walk is certainly built for him to do that, but he just jumps off the screen, and it's a very bold performance with a big accent, and he's just jacked walking along. He's handsome. He's got a big scar on his face. It's really, really good stuff, and I'm very excited to see where his career goes from here.
He's the emotional center of that movie, even more than Cooper Hoffman is. Mm. Like, he's so great. He was my next pick down at Gooch, so I'm so happy you took him. He's incredible.
Yeah, that's a good list. Timothy Chalamet, Michael B. Jordan, Jesse Plemons, Renata Reinsva, that's how I said it. I guess I'm saying it wrong. Leonardo DiCaprio, Joel Edgerton, Amanda Seyfried, Lee Byung-hun, Jesse Buckley, Sean Penn, Stellan Skarsgård, Rose Byrne, Ethan Hawke, Emma Stone, Amy Madigan, Ralph Fiennes. Ethan Hawke for Blue Moon, by the way, not Black Phone 2. Ralph Fiennes, Indy the Dog, Miles Caton, Sally Hawkins, David Johnson. So the ones on my list that didn't make it, Memer can kind of read off theirs. I had Benicio del Toro.
Yep.
Top 10. I reached at the end for, I do think he was fucking amazing. Josh O'Connor, Wake Up Dead Man, Chase Infinity. Josh O'Connor was also very good in The Mastermind. Yep. Chase Infinity, One Battle After Another. I really hope she gets a nomination. It's going to be her or Amanda Seyfried, but I wish both got it. Inga Ipsdotter, Lily is great, Sentimental Value. Jack O'Connell, awesome in Sinners. One of my favorite moments of the year. Gwyneth Paltrow, Marty Supreme, I think is not getting enough love. I think she's great, Marty Supreme. And then the one that I I wanted to throw Tim Robinson Friendship out there. I think he's awesome in that. Also, you know what's a performance off the beaten path I want to give credit to this year? Liam Neeson, Naked Gun. He's great. He's so good in that movie. Shouldn't get nominated, but to play it straight like that, you know, that takes some chops, and
and that's like shoes to fill, like you would not believe. That is such a role to fill.
You named a lot of mine, but I also had Kate Hudson, Song Blue. I thought she was very good. Will Arnett, and then Kirsten Dunst in Roofman. I thought she was very good.
She was actually very similar to, I would say, Kirsten Dunst is to Kate Hudson in Song Blue, like that Midwestern or Middle America mom, like in actually being believable. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like a real human being. Super good. I had The Rock on mine. I think The Rock, I didn't love, like we were all kind of in between on Smashing Machine, but like I think his performance was really, really good. Pattinson in Mickey 17 I thought was really good. Another dual performance that was really
fair.
Good. Daniel Day-Lewis in Anemone, that movie was not great. He was very good in it, which I think you can expect from anything with Daniel Day-Lewis. Denzel in Highest to Lowest I think was really good. That movie was just butt cheeks, which really is a shame of a waste of performance. Fassbender in Black Bag I liked a lot. And then there's one which I'm shocked you didn't take, Clemmer. Because it's one you and I both liked a lot. It's a performance from an actor that seems to only take roles as good guys lately, and he played one as a bad guy. It's not a great movie, but man, was he good.
True.
Y'all need a pilot. Mark Wahlberg. Yeah. I loved Mark Wahlberg in Fright Risk, just doing something different for once in a long time and just being fun and energetic and interesting. I liked it a lot.
That movie comes to life every time he's on. If he's not, remember he was like napping for half the movie falling asleep. Yeah. Like when he's actually awake for that movie, the movie does have a, like, if we've had top 40 list, Kendrick, he'd be on it.
Yeah.
I have a few. We got to talk about Ice Cube's performance in War of the Worlds. Just one of those things that'll always stick with me. Just him reacting to a screen for 2 hours was just unbelievable. Jennifer Lawrence, a movie that, and Die My Love, a movie that just was never going to play to a wide audience, but is a very good performance. Also, Jacoby Jupe, great child performance in Hamnet. And then Una Chaplin, which I know you all are kind of mixed on the Avatar movies, but I do think what they do with those performance capture.
She was good.
Performances. Yeah, no.
Disappeared from the movie, just goes away. But she was very good. Chiwetel Delarilindo too, very good in Sinners. Felicity Jones, Train Dreams. Glenn Close, I thought was good in Wake Up Dead Man too. I think Elordi's very good in Frankenstein. I liked Adam Sandler and Jake Kelly. I know we're mixed on Jake Kelly. Paul Mescal, Hamnet. I thought he was good. You know, I didn't love that movie. I think Joaquin Phoenix was great in Eddington.
Yeah.
Wagner Moore for Secret Agent is going to get a nomination. He's very good in that movie. Very different movie. Very curious what people think about Secret Agent. I mentioned Wunmi Mosaku from Sinners. And then shout out, you want to talk about just a good sports movie performance? Shout out Brad Pitt. F1, baby.
Such a ridiculous performance.
Sonny Hayes.
You could be a worse supporting actor. I think I might actually, because you mentioned Frankenstein. Christoph Waltz, what the fuck?
Oh,
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. One of the all-time. I'd also go, you want to talk about one of the worst supporting actors? Tobias Menzies in F1.
Yeah.
Like almost movie-ruining, corny and stupid.
Yeah. That was bad. That was real bad.
Can we get Peyton Manning on that list too?
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. Like one of the worst performances of the year is Peyton Manning. Like I don't think that's an exaggeration. I don't think it's his fault. I think it's Bradley Cooper's fault.
Yes.
But it's I think that is fair. I think don't release this clip yet, but I think you can release this clip in like a week or two. I don't want to spoil the cameo. Peyton Manning, very funny SNL actor, very funny in commercials. Legitimately one of the worst performances of the year of any 2025 movie. Stops movie dead in its tracks. I think that's like crazy.
It's one of the most pivotal scenes of the movie. Yes.
The scene in the movie.
Yes. Yes.
You would find like Tubi original movies where it's like, my hoe's got like roaches in her crib. Like performances in that will be better than what Peyton Manning's been in that movie.
And again, it's not fair. It's not his fault. Like he was cast in that movie. It's Bradley Cooper's fault for casting that movie. It just doesn't. It doesn't work. If you play like you said, Kendrick, if he played himself, it's probably a different story. But he doesn't. He does not play himself.
No.
Yeah.
Before we move on, last week we did our top 20 movies of the year. We did not give the fans their shout out on how they have the year ranked. So I'll give their top, what should we do? Top 20 or should we do top 10 and bottom 10? That might be a fun way to do it.
Top 10, bottom 10, I think is fun.
Yeah. Yeah. So their top 10 of the year, number 10, surprising. It was Just an Accident. And there did have to be a certain number of reviews for a movie to qualify for this list, but this did have enough reviews and it was Just an Accident at number 10. At number 9, Hamnet. At number 8, Begonia. At number 7, Train Dreams. 6, Weapons. 5, No Other Choice. 4, Sentimental Value. 3, Sinners. 2, Marty Supreme. And number 1, One Battle After Another. Then their bottom 10. Ooh, gotta scroll down here. Oh my God. I guess this is number 132 on the year for them. And then we'll go down. We have Woman in the Yard.
Oh God.
So terrible bad.
Movie.
Yeah.
Deserves to be there.
Then we have Play Dirty, was it Shane Black? Yes.
Yeah.
Shane Black.
Watch this for the show. It's torture.
Then we have Five Nights at Freddy's 2. Deserved, I think.
Yeah.
Hurry Up Tomorrow. You remember Hurry Up Tomorrow with a weekend?
Oh, yeah. It's
like weird vanity project.
Weekend. Terrible. Yes.
So horrible movie.
Shut the fuck up. Shut up. That's one of the best clips of the year.
The whole movie's about like how everyone loves him. Yeah. It's a very strange.
I said film. The Weeknd. I should have said Abel. What does he demand to go by when he does these? Then we have Love Hurts with two former Academy Award winners.
The worst chemistry you'll see on screen.
Bad.
Then we have Back in Action with Cameron Diaz and Jamie Foxx.
I still can't believe that was a real movie. And they spent a lot of money making that.
Yeah, that was about this time last year, right?
Yeah.
Then we have The Electric State from the Russo brothers, who will have what will likely be the highest grossing movie of this year.
Yeah, what I would talk about. If that movie is good and well-received, do you think someone sits them down and is like, just stop doing anything not Marvel? Just stick with... Just stick with what Electric State is one of the most. I wish Electric State was a bigger deal so more people could talk about it and like connect on it because it is fascinating.
It's one of the most expensive movies ever made.
And nobody's seen it. No,
Mr. Peanut is one of the main characters.
So here's the bottom three in the Lost Lands.
That's the worst.
Clemmer and I will agree on that's the worst. That's the worst movie of the year.
Then we have Kinda Pregnant from Amy Schumer.
Oh, man, that was
bad, but not
really bad.
I did not see that.
And then I think you guys can guess what the worst movie of the year was.
War of the Worlds.
But like, Clemmer, I can't put In the Lost Lands. Like, In the Lost Lands is, if I actually I drop the whole movies are subjective thing when you talk about bad, when you talk about things like this, because I'm like, no, I'm right. If you don't agree, you're wrong. Like, if you don't think In the Lost Lands is the worst movie of the year, you haven't seen it. That's basically what it comes down to for me. Like, I'm telling you, just you. Even if you don't agree with any of my movie opinions, if you see In the Lost Lands, you will agree with me and Clemmer. It's so bad.
In the Lost Lands is remarkably ugly. It is like the ugliest thing you've ever seen. Like visually, just the CGI. It's just horrible. It's so bad. It's so pointless, and it's a depressing slog. It's ugly. It's horrible.
You just haven't seen the movie if you don't agree. It's just what I don't know how else to say it. It's so bad.
And to War of the Worlds credit, it does enter that zone. it's a rarefied air where you get so bad that it just flips around and horseshoes back.
Right. There's at least some fun though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a fun, like the Battlefield Earth kind of world, yeah. Right? Where it's like, wow, that's such a train wreck. I can't look away, but it's fun. I'm having fun with it. You
know? Yeah.
There's no fun to be had in the Lost Lands.
No.
None.
Same with Electric State. And like, it's like, there's no fun to be had. It's just, it's competently incompetent. I don't know how to explain it. Like it's horrible.
Yeah. Shout out the fans. That's very good. Just, great ranking. 132 movies. If you want to see the full list, go to our Letterboxd. Did a good job.
Yeah, it's Kind of Pregnant was pretty bad too, though. I will shout out Kind of Pregnant. That's a bad movie.
Hey y'all, it's Gooch. Congratulations on making it this far into Project Big Screen episode 15. You just heard your top 10 movies of the year and bottom 10 movies of the year from the fans. And if you're not a part of the fan rankings, don't worry. I'm going to tell you how to join them right now. All I want you to do, whether you're listening on Spotify or watching on YouTube, is comment below with your answer to this question along with your Letterboxd handle. The question is, what is the best performance of 2025 that did not make our top 20? So what is your favorite performance that we did not list? Comment that below with your Letterboxd handle. I'll follow you from the Project Big Screen Letterboxd account, and then you will be part of our fan rankings. Again, thank you so much for your support. Make sure you keep doing all the great things that you have been, liking our videos, making sure you're subscribed to, everywhere here on YouTube or on Spotify, Apple Podcast. Keep supporting the show. Can't tell you how much we appreciate it. All right, back to the show.
Nothing special for us with the Golden Globes, by the way, in case you're wondering. The Golden Globes are stupid. They don't have any impact on the Oscars. We'll talk about them extensively next week just to kind of give it a recap and give some thoughts. But it ain't the Oscars. It's not the Oscars. But that's it. Other than that, next week, big interview next week, I believe, it's airing next week. We also have, along with that, we will be doing 28 Years Later, The Bone Temple, The Rip on Netflix with Matt Damon and Ben Affleck. And then if anyone sees the Greenland 2, we will also talk about Greenland.
Already saw it. Ready to talk about it.
Yep. I'm seeing it this week. I'm seeing it this week.
I don't know if we're allowed to say anything about The Rip, but.
Me and Gooch have seen it, yeah.
Pretty good. Pretty good.
I'm super excited. When does that come out on Netflix?
Next
16th.
Yes.
16th. So that's all right. Okay. It's not playing in Paris. I don't think it's getting any theatrical run.
I think they had some. I read somewhere they're adding like a different bonus to the structure for their actors. So like they foregoed that, but then like depending on how many views they get, like everyone that worked on the movie gets some big payout or something like that. They had some weird structure with this.
I was hoping to at least pop up in the Paris, but nothing at all. I don't know.
We'll put a bow on 2025 in the coming weeks, closer to the Oscars, and Lee's not foot wide yet. And we will do those. Secret Agents, what I definitely really want to talk about. And it was just an accident. Though it was just an accident, it's a little easier to find right now if you're trying to watch it. Where the other one is unfortunately not. I was kind of surprised Secret Agent is not a little wider, because Neon is typically pretty good about getting those movies out. Fascinating movie though. Other than that, I think that's it. What happens when you lock 18 coworkers in an office for 1 week to compete for $250,000 of cash? This is Surviving Barstool Season 5, presented by Rumble Premium, where each episode releases 3 hours early. So get it ad-free before anybody else, only when you join Rumble Premium. New episodes of Surviving Barstool will be released every Sunday and Wednesday, leading up to the Labor Day finale on September 7th. You can watch Surviving Barstool at 5 p.m. on Rumble Premium and everywhere else at 8 p.m. Eastern. So for Ken Jack, Gooch, Clemmer, I'm Jeff DeLow. We will talk to you next time.
Stella Blue Coffee ready-to-drink can lattes are officially available nationwide at Target. That's right. Whether you're making a Target run for toothpaste, paper towels, or somehow spending $200 on things you didn't know you needed, stop by the coffee section and see why everyone is turning to Stella Blue. The cans are made with 100% Colombian coffee, real dairy, real sugar, and contain 190 milligrams of caffeine. They've got dessert-level flavor with coffee-level function. You can choose from espresso, sweet cream, or espresso cafe mocha. And once you try them, You'll understand why they're the best canned lattes out there. Here's the best part. 100% of proceeds will go toward our We Brew to Rescue mission, in which we're funding the adoption of 1,000 pets across the country. Grab a Stella Blue at Target, taste the difference, and make a difference. Stella Blue Coffee. Stella Blue Coffee's new canned lattes are here. Crafted with 100% Colombian coffee, each can is a good source of protein and comes in two smooth flavors, espresso cafe mocha and espresso sweet cream. And whether you're braving your morning commute or chasing your pup, Stella Blue cans are for those always on the go and for those who care. Stella Blue is more than just great coffee. It's about giving back. I named the brand after my rescue dog, Stella, who inspired our mission to help more dogs find their forever homes. Every purchase supports animal rescue organizations, so when you drink Stella Blue, you're not just fueling your day, you're saving a dog's life. Try the new cans today, taste the difference, and make a difference. All new Stella Blue coffee canned lattes now available at StellaBlueCoffee.com or subscribe on Amazon for 10% off.